I think they like you, Steve.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling. Hi, it's Monday at 6:10, and welcome to show number 1101. Dave and Mary are back from their stair climb. Did you guys shower?
Yes.
A long time.
I can't speak for Mary, but I did.
Four flights of stairs. Four flights of stairs.
Yes, four flights. Man, I am just exhausted for those four flights.
Do you feel it today?
Not really. No, I feel pretty good.
Boy, are you annoying the listeners right now. They want you to be sore.
I'm really not.
I'm not either.
You were sore yesterday, though, I bet.
I was a little tired, but it gave me a great excuse to lie around and watch Tiger Woods in the afternoon.
Tiger Woods' story, if you missed it in sports, finishes second. He's teed up for the Masters nicely. It's always the second day. It's the second day after you do this.
Thanks.
Yeah, you'll cramp up tomorrow.
Warning us?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, my time was 12 seconds off last year.
Off slower, you mean? Or faster?
It was slower.
Slower. Okay.
Slower.
Well, you're getting older.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yes.
How about you, Mary Vandal?
My time was actually faster than it was 4 years ago, the last time I kept a record of it. Can you believe it?
That's tremendous.
I was very happy.
And did you beat Dave?
Yes.
Well, not by much.
We both got medals.
We did.
We got medals.
Didn't everybody get a medal?
Yeah.
I don't know if you
Your point is?
I think you had to climb four, didn't you, to get a medal?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, what happens if you only climb three?
They give you don't get one.
They give you the strap for the medal?
I don't know.
The lanyard?
The medal without the strap.
It's a nice, big, heavy
ribbon.
Medal.
It's a ribbon.
It's a participation
not
ribbon.
Not a strap.
See how I'm struggling to find the word?
That's a different climb.
Where's the strap?
Steve, where were you? I thought you were going to be on one of the ledges handing us water.
No, not water, but I did contribute. I donated.
Oh, good. Well, thank you for that.
$100,000 per tower.
You didn't.
Really?
No, not at all.
Just for me and Dave.
Yes, exactly. No, I donated to Patty Vasquez, too.
Oh.
To Patty Vasquez's team. Was there any trash talk between you guys?
No, actually, Patty and I had a nice conversation about it. And
they made up.
We were all,
We all wore the same T-shirts.
Yeah, same T-shirts.
WGN T-shirts. Very nice.
Very nice.
Green.
Very nice.
The team captain came together.
Dean will be on later. Dean was doing the show from there.
Yeah, but I didn't talk to him.
Why?
Well, he kind of made it clear the other morning when he was in for you that he didn't want all these sweaty competitors coming in the studio.
But we went in anyway.
He didn't acknowledge us.
So well, they were having Garrett's
sweaty
popcorn.
People hug him.
Where were they at stationed? Were they in the lobby?
Yeah.
They were in the lobby of the presidential towers.
Yeah. I told you I lived there for a while. I lived there for like 6 months.
I remember that. I remember you said that.
Did you climb the stairs?
No. I always took the elevator. Top six at six time. Let's go.
Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel. It's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. The 60 Minute Men.
Remember one really bad night there.
One?
Yeah, just one. did I mention later on Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson will be on?
Yes.
Yeah, so that'll be good. And Dr. Most in a few minutes. All right, item number one, the Southside Irish Parade off without a hitch yesterday on a really beautiful day.
Mm-hmm.
Did you cover it?
I did cover it for Channel 9. We had
you're not Irish, you're Greek.
Yeah, but everybody's Irish on Southside Irish Parade Day. We've been going to that for years, and it was orderly and wonderful, and I don't think they had any arrests, but almost 200,000 people showed up yesterday. It was political.
Well, how's that compared to a normal crowd?
It's about what it normally is.
Okay.
So they had a great turnout. It was sunny, cold, and filled with politicians, as you would expect.
All the people running for governor and attorney general.
Yep.
Yes, Democrats sir. Have 400 people running for attorney general.
They do. I know Kwame Raoul was out there, and I think Pat Quinn, and I'm sure the others were, but those are the two that I saw.
Next, a couple of sports notes. March Madness seeds are out. Loyola, congratulations. First tournament bid.
It's great.
Number 11 seed. They'll face Miami in the first round. First NCAA tournament appearance since what?
1985.
Is that the year that Villanova won?
Yes, Villanova beat Georgetown, but Georgetown was the defending champ, and Loyola played them in the Sweet 16, lost to them.
Yeah.
But the fact they got there to
they have different guys now?
Loyola?
Than that team?
Yes, yeah. That
just
was
a few.
Al Frederick Hughes, and
those guys
would
be
against Patrick Ewing.
Those guys would be my age now. They'd be like 50 to 54. Yeah. By the way, I'll be 57 this week.
Mm.
Wow. Right. I remember when I turned 35, I got in a discussion with the guy I was working for at the time about not to talk about my age because it sounded too old on the air.
Get out.
35.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I'll be 57 Wednesday. You going to speak at my eulogy?
I was going to say, I'm waiting. Yeah. I'm already writing, you know, out my thoughts.
Jake Arrieta, 3-year deal with the Phillies, and ends his tenure with the Cubs. Obviously, the Phillies will play the Cubs twice this year. And that was a whole weird deal. He probably cost himself money by holding out longer for a better contract.
Or a longer contract.
Yeah. Tiger Woods, as we mentioned, finished second in the Valspar over the weekend. And he's in great shape to make a run at the Masters, the Arnold Palmer Invitational first that's coming up this weekend. He's won that about 47 times.
Yes, he has.
Next, the president of these United States made a bizarre speech Saturday night in Pittsburgh, where, amongst other things, he called our friend Chuck Todd, friend of the show, a sleepy-eyed son of a bitch. Very presidential.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Very strong.
Completely.
Followed that up with Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, who did an interview with Leslie Stahl last night in 60 Minutes, where she seemed to have no understanding of the schools that she's in charge of.
It was one of the most bizarre. I mean, Leslie Stahl throws some tough questions out there, but
those were
it
tough
was
questions.
Extremely bizarre.
No, those weren't hard questions. Those are questions, if you're in charge of the Department of Education, you ought to know the answers to it.
Didn't you almost think it was like a job interview and you had done no prep for it?
You know what it reminded me of? It was Sarah Palin. It reminded me of Sarah Palin and Katie Couric.
Yeah.
What papers do you read? All of them?
All of them. People. Us.
Next, let us entertain you, bringing a four-level restaurant space to the riverfront, 35,000-square-foot space, part of a $50 million upgrade of the office tower at 321 North Clark on the northern edge of the Chicago River. I'm trying to picture that. Where is that?
It's right, Clark on the river. No,
yeah,
it's
I know
right.
That, but what's
okay,
there
you know,
now?
When you go down
what's next
O'Brien's, you know, when you go down, it's just a little bit where the Merchandise Mart, I guess it would be Kitty Corner from there.
So four-level restaurant space,
east.
Meaning restaurants in every level, or one four-level restaurant?
I think one four-level restaurant.
It's a big restaurant.
I think.
I'm being told by the voices in my head, two restaurants and an event space.
Two restaurants and an event space is
that's what
you're
meant?
Thinking of, yes.
That's six. I got one more. I don't know. Next. I'm out. That's your top six at six.
That's it.
That's all today for the top six at six.
No more.
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
It's got to be from my list, isn't it, Joe? Who is this? Little James Brown? Leave this up for about an hour. I remember when I was a kid, I used to come home from school. I'd get off the bus at my grandmother's house. She used to have a note on the door that said, "If the house is rocking, don't come knocking." They don't write them like this anymore. It's Papa Don't Make No Mess. James. 6:23. Boy, some tough news overnight last night. A helicopter crash in New York City. Where, how many dead? Four? Five?
I had three, but
I think it's five
might
now.
Have been updated now.
And the thing I don't understand about this is the pilot got out, but the five passengers did not. And
it is five. Yep.
They had they were strapped in. It's a helicopter. But I've ridden on a helicopter. You're on a helicopter ride?
I have been on a helicopter a couple times. Yeah.
And it's a seat belt setup.
Mm-hmm.
It's more elaborate than that. But I don't quite understand, unless they were knocked out, why they wouldn't have been able to get out of the helicopter.
The three in the back. Yeah, that could be. I mean, they were probably belted in. I mean, they didn't.
Yeah, but why
really
couldn't you get the belt off? That's the part that the investigators.
The pilot did.
Right.
He was the sixth person, but I don't know why the others weren't able. He was able to free himself.
And a plane crash overseas overnight where 60 or 70 may have been dead in. Now I'm going to lose the country. Well, you can look it up for me. What
was it in Kathmandu?
Kathmandu. Thank you, Bob Seger. It was in Kathmandu. All right, let's have some good news. 624, you got a gallery up there, Sandberg?
I do.
We need some good news.
Yes.
What's the gallery?
It's of Patrick, my stepson, his surprise 11th birthday party that we hosted on Friday.
I saw some of these pictures, and I have a question, because, Dave, I don't know if you remember, when Stephen was, Stephen and Ross, my son, are about the same age.
Yep.
And, Mary, I don't know if you remember, it's when kids were little, like a laser tag party was a big deal.
Oh,
remember
yeah.
laser tag
yeah.
parties?
Sure. My son is the same age as your two, and yeah, we always did laser tag parties.
That was a big deal.
Always.
This is a video game truck?
Yes, a video game truck. It's called Game Truck.
So does everybody get their own video game to play?
You play against each other. They go into that trailer. That
How many kids can play at one time?
20.
At one time?
At one time. You'll see in the pictures, there's 20 of them playing.
This is like the bus of fun that we had when the bus pulled up to your house. And
this is what's so different about now. These guys are having fun by staring at screens and not talking to each other.
And they're not in the house,
which is really
Well, that's your fun.
Yes.
Yeah, that's your fun.
I didn't even think about that. That's a great point.
It's funny because... you know, you pay for it, and then they give you a paper with gratuity highlighted at the end.
I'm sure. Yeah.
And I had told Pat I had mixed emotions about tipping in general, because it's not an inexpensive party. And we had already talked with Patrick's mom and stepdad, and we had some thoughts. But then when the guy is standing, his name is Spencer, he's standing right in your doorway with
you
a highlighted paper. And it's like, okay, I guess he's getting 20% just
to
sit there.
I was going
to say. I don't know. I caved. And
I have a problem with that, too.
I know. And so I was running it by Patrick's mom because I just want to make sure that
there's a service component to that. He's supposed to keep the kids alive during the party.
They're not moving. They're sitting on a couch inside of a truck while he's playing
still,
a game.
Yeah,
I will say it kind of smells
ridiculous.
In there with that 11-year-old boy is sweating.
Well, you guys are cheap.
It's like when people want a tip for carry out.
But Pat and Patrick's stepdad were talking about what it could cost to run this thing, you know, overall, the cost, the hard cost, how much a truck, the screens. They think they're making out like bandits.
Yeah, I don't think the running part. It's the initial cost, and then you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah. So anyway, but it was really fun. He was surprised. You know, he pulled up to the house. The truck was in our driveway.
That's the greatest moment.
And his
when you can surprise your kid.
Yep. And he complained a little on Saturday that because it was a surprise, he didn't get to have that feeling of looking forward to it.
Did you explain? This is nothing like when I drive by a McDonald's and hope I can eat there someday.
Yeah, no.
Was that it? Hope I can eat? No, think about eating. I don't actually get anything about eating.
I do. I like to think about getting a sausage, egg, and cheese muffin.
Well, I'm glad I had a good time.
We did, and then they came inside and they ate pizza and they spilled Gatorade and ate candy.
Was it the orange Gatorade?
It was red.
Oh,
even worse.
Red and blue. And we have Lightwood floors, you'll see in the picture. So
why'd you let them in the house?
Well, because they had to eat. You can't eat in the truck.
You can't throw the food in the...
were they all boys?
You know,
boys? Boys can sit out in the lawn.
There was a couple of girls.
You can't eat on the truck and he still wants a tip?
I know.
Wait
you can't. No food in there. And there were a couple of girls, but originally Patrick's mom had said we should do it out in the garage, which a lot of the families do. That way they never have to come in.
Yeah.
But it was just a little cold on Friday for the garage.
Well,
and
then,
Pat
listen,
is like the coat police, here. So he would have been harassing kids about putting coats on, and they don't put coats on when they're having fun. And then they went in the basement and they played a very close range moving dodgeball at each other. Somebody got hit in the throat. Then there was a coughing fit.
Now it sounds like a party.
Now it's
turning into a party.
I'm looking at the pictures. This is great. Yeah, they were like, I think the pictures are cute. So,
Dave, when you and I grew up, we would, of course, have a similar thing, but we had a pickup truck that would come up with rocks in the back.
Yes.
And you would just throw rocks
throw
at each other.
Yeah.
And then the laser tag thing was great because your buddies would just take each other around and just fire lasers at each other.
And then they ate pizza there.
And they
ate everything there. They did everything.
Yeah.
And we were done. Chuck E. Cheese's and Showbiz Pizza. That was our era. We would go play the video games. So you'd actually be at the restaurant and then a pizza there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. This is the, I don't anticipate it.
This is North Shore. So I assume you got expensive pizza as well?
Lou Malnati's.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a cake from Deerfield Bakery, which was amazing.
And you didn't get the friends and family price from Lou Malnati's?
No. And Patrick, you'll can see in the photos when they sing happy birthday to him. He thinks he's Jim Cornelison, and he uses his own hand as a mic, and he sings along to his own birthday serenade, which you don't usually see the birthday boy singing along.
He's cocky. I like him.
Yeah.
He's a very confident little guy.
Yeah. He didn't want it to end.
He also didn't mention he scored the winning goal yesterday.
Oh, he did. He had a playoff hockey game. He scored
on a breakaway.
Yeah. He went around a defender, and then he did top shelf, which was... I think Pat worked on...
Which is great, because Joe, you and I were talking about it. We thought he'd go five hole.
This goalie could not be had down
top
low.
Top shelf is where the cookies are at, so...
Going for the cookies.
But Pat has been working on lifting the puck for the whole 5 years that he's been playing, and then just at the end of last year, he got it, and he's really good at it. And so, but this is the first goal, I think, where he's lifted it over. It was pretty cool.
You remember that the rest of your
life. My dad jumped out of the stands. I thought he was going to have a heart attack. He was so excited.
That's cool. It's a cool moment.
Yeah, so anyway, good birthday weekend.
All right, so where do you see the pictures?
At WGNRadio.com. I also put them on the Steve Cochran Show Facebook and Twitter.
All right, at Cochran Show, Steve Cochran Show on Facebook.
And you can't quite see any of the Gatorade on the floor.
Just trust you, it's there.
And so, yes, and one little note. We did the little thing you take with you when you're an attendee.
A goodie bag.
Goodie bag. The most ridiculous tradition ever, the goodie bag for the kids.
They all got Gatorade water bottles because they're all in sports. So, and we had candy, and you're supposed to fill the Gatorade water bottle with candy. Except for I had set it out in a nice display, which you'll see in the photos. And then Patrick's mom had to police the kids. All they did was they went right for the candy. I had a pizza and everything. They're all eating candy. And then there was candy all over the floor.
Boys.
How are they spilling candy?
These are boys.
Gummy bears. And there's I found a gummy bear in the kitchen.
Oh, God.
So
who's supposed to yell at him?
Well, Patrick's mom was policing.
Well, she should be the one to yell at
him. I like to organize things, but I don't really like to engage with the people. When the parents came, they were all standing in the doorway, and then Pat was giving some of them wine, and they were standing. I'm like, are these people staying? Or
giving them wine?
Yeah, it kind of.
The worst thing you can possibly do is have snacks and reasons for the parents to stay.
I know. I was this doesn't look like it's ending.
This party's over. Take your children and leave.
I like hard outs, you know. So anyway, but it was fun.
I did. This goodie bag thing. Have I complained about this enough in the last 15 years?
You know, they do them at weddings, too, you know.
Well, that's a favor.
That's the same thing.
Yeah.
That's like a golf tee. That's not, you know.
Wedding's a commitment. Birthday, it's a kid's birthday. You go, it's his day, her day. It's not your day, Timmy.
Didn't you go to birthday parties and get favors?
Never.
I didn't either. I mean, I don't ever remember that.
I do.
There were no goodie bags.
It's a North Side, South Side thing, I think, because I never did either.
I didn't grow up on the North Shore.
You were in highfalutin D.C.
That's right.
That was the burb you were in. He lived in highfalutin Maryland. Right. It was right outside of D.C.
We got a beef jerky and a pat on the back.
You know what I got?
Thanks for coming.
You know what I got? Party's over. Get out. Go home.
But the moms would flash the lights on and off, I guess it's time to go.
That's what
nobody knows. All right, 6:32. Headlines next, 720 WGN.
Woke up after midnight. Both my arms and legs were sore. On my upper lip, there's a growth I've never seen before. And I wish that there was someone I could call.
But there is.
The WGN hotline.
Come on, everybody.
I have edema on my thighs, pink stuff in my eyes, and I need you now.
6:44, we go to Dr. Kevin Most. And by the way, we were talking about kids a moment ago. Dr. Most was at the Blackhawks game yesterday with my pal Jerry. What a Hawks nut Jerry is.
Yeah.
Oh, Steve, he is an unbelievable Hawks nut.
That's your nephew.
Yeah, he's David's son, and he knows the game better than any of us. I mean, he knows every single player.
I was surprised when he went over the wall. He went over the glass and onto the ice. That surprised me.
Here, you want to hear a funny story? I don't know if you watched the game, but a Boston player gets hit. I don't know whether it was a stick or a puck, and obviously lost a tooth on the Connor Murphy goes and picks up the tooth and gives it to the trainer. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, Brad says, oh, look at that. Connor Murphy just picked up the guy's tooth. And little Jerry goes, oh, that's so nice of him.
Well, see, that's how sweet. The kids learn. When somebody picks up your tooth. By the way, with a glove on, he picked up the tooth?
No, he took the glove off.
I was going to say, that'd be a neat trick. All right, let's talk some wearable devices here because I have a Fitbit Ionica. Dave wears an Apple Watch. You know, you see them all the time. People have these sport watches on, and these things that count your steps, manage your heartbeat, allegedly track your sleep. But there's all sorts of medical devices as well that are out there. Cool toys. What do you know? What's the new stuff?
Yeah, and like you said, remember it's the Nike Fuel Band and the first Fitbit?
Yeah, yeah.
All it did was tell you how far you went. It gave you a simple data point. But now medicine is starting to look at saying, okay, or technology in medicine is starting to look at, all right, where are the pain points? Where are we inefficient at monitoring? Where are we terrible at monitoring? Or what opportunities do we have to do things better? And, you know, take something as simple as a thermometer. So when you were little, you remember those mercury thermometers you had to put underneath your tongue?
Or in your butt.
Or in your butt.
Yep.
Or your grandma just kind of felt your forehead and said, you don't have a fever, go outside and play.
Right. It's only 104. Get out there.
And then, you know, so we went from the mercury ones to digital ones that read a lot quicker. And also we have the ones that you can put in the ear, roll on your forehead that are very quick and accurate. But now we're also looking at those as just single data points. Well, now we have a wearable device that you can put on a child. It lasts for 24 to 48 hours, and it monitors their temperature continuously. So we know when they spike a fever, and it'll actually tell your iPhone what your child's temperature is.
So you'll have a record when you take them to the doctor, that kind of thing?
Exactly. Or let's say you're at work and you have a babysitter at home watching your child and you're concerned. You know, it's not like, oh, can you check his temperature? All you have to do is look on your iPhone. And for doctors, this is one where we're treating an illness or we're concerned about an illness, we may recommend that you do this. And then we'll say, set the tone, so set the monitor, so if it goes over 101.5, that's when we want to know. So it's not for everybody, it's not for everyday use, but it's more for tracking and monitoring during an illness.
It's Dr. Kevin Most. And by the way, I should mention that, of course, he's sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here.
Doc, I know everything now is on your phone. I know there's apps for taking temperature, for seeing if you need to see a doctor or whatnot. What, are we getting too technological? I mean, the old days of where you actually need to go in and see the old days, like last year, when you need to go in and see the doctor. Are we kind of getting away from that? And is that a good thing?
No, I don't think we're getting away from it. I think what's going to happen, actually, is that you're going to see a doctor for appropriate things now instead of, I don't want to say the word inappropriate, but things that you really don't have to. And when we're talking about the wearables, we're looking at prevention and prediction and management. So the ones that we're doing is actually going to allow a doctor to say, you have this illness. Let's say someone who has a very fair skin and has a high propensity for skin cancer. You have a good chance of skin cancer. Because of that, I want you to wear skin protection monitoring devices. So they're going to start to do more prevention and use technology to help that.
All right, so these SPF monitors, was it L'Oreal that gave them out first?
Yeah, yeah. So L'Oreal has a really cool one. It's just a little sticker. It's a little thing. It fits on your nail if you wanted to put it on your nail, anywhere that the sun is exposed. And what happens is after it hits a certain amount of UV rays, it changes colors. So it's telling you, it's time for you to either get out of the sun or reapply sunblock.
Now, so there you go. It's right there in front of you.
Exactly. We always talk about reapplying sunblock, but who does it?
Right.
So L'Oreal has that little one. Now, there's also other ones that you can attach onto your belt, onto your golf bag, onto your shirt, and those are monitors that are going to inform you. They're going to send a message to your cell phone saying, reapply sunblock, or you've been in the sun this long, you're going to be in 20 minutes, you're going to start doing damage to your sun. So get out of the sun or get in the shade.
I use you and I play a lot of golf, and yep. I use this powder that a dermatologist gave me called it's Colore, C-O-L-O-R-E. Mm-hmm. I look like Mrs. Doubtfire putting on makeup, but who cares? And it's great for golf because it's no grease issue, and it works very, very well. But you also have this SPF clothing now. Is that stuff any good?
Absolutely. You know, the SPF clothing, because a lot of people wear clothing that's fairly light and they don't realize that, especially in the summer, sun rays can get through that. But now we do have SPF clothing. And if you, again, wear it at a 30, you're covering your skin, the exposed skin that you have, with sunblock. And now the shirt or the other or shorts are going to protect you as well. And I'm a big fan of the powder as well. I think it works better. It doesn't sweat off as much. And I'm a huge powder fan.
Yeah, it's great when you see Dr. Most and I look like we're putting on our makeup on the first tee. Because it's important to look good. More with Dr. Kevin Most in a second. Talking to Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. All right, Doc, so when it comes to wearables and technology to make us all feel better, let's talk a few specific things here, like diabetes. Is there something out there for that?
Yeah. You know, you all probably know somebody who has diabetes, and if you don't, you know, they have to check their blood sugar, you know, a few times a day. And the way they do that is they put a little hole in their finger, get a little piece of a little drop of blood, put it on a small little piece of paper and put it into a monitor, and it tells them what their blood sugar is in real time. And that allows them to then change their insulin dosing based on how they've eaten during the day and what activity they have. But you can imagine what a hassle that is and what pain that is. But Abbott now has a monitor that actually just attaches just right to your skin, and it stays there the entire day, and it's continuously monitoring your blood sugar. No more sticking your finger. Just on your arm.
So this is separate from the pump that's been around for a few years that makes sure you get your insulin. This is the monitoring portion.
Correct. Yeah, the pump delivers the insulin, where this would monitor to tell you how much to tell the pump to give. But the hassle of doing it and the hassle of sticking your finger, and you can imagine you're out to dinner, you're out for an evening, you're not going to run into the bathroom and check your blood sugar.
Probably not great if you do it at the table.
Right, exactly. And people do, unfortunately.
Sure they do. All right, what about your heart?
Well, this would have been a great one for Dave and Mary to wear yesterday. You know, for people who have heart problems and have had heart problems in the past, they probably have worn something called a Holter monitor. And the reason we do that is when we do an EKG in the office or at the hospital, we're checking your heart rate and your electrical activity in your heart for a very short period of time, a minute, not even 30 seconds. But what we really want to know is, tell us what your heart's doing over a longer period of time, because we want to make sure that we can capture any of their irregularities. So people used to have to wear something called a Holter monitor attached to their chest, and they carry a little box around. We've gotten to a point where it's at least Bluetooth now and easier for us to do it in the hospital. But now there's a monitor out that you just slap on your chest, and you wear it around, and it just monitors you without any boxes. And it's good for you know, up to 14 days instead of just a couple of days with the Holter monitor.
Dave.
Doc, I have the heart rate monitor on my Apple Watch.
Yeah.
Which I remember asking you last year on the stair climb in the fourth tower. I looked at it, and it said 178, which I was kind of alarmed. That seemed kind of high. So I checked it again yesterday on the fourth tower, and it was like in the 160 range. So I felt a little bit better about that. But how accurate are those?
Those are really accurate as far as rate. So what this monitor would do, it would also tell us what's going on with your heart rhythm. You know, sometimes when people exercise, they'll go from a regular what we call sinus rhythm into a tachycardia or into some other funky rhythm, which we don't like. So it's really good at telling us how fast your heart is beating. It's just not telling us electrically how it's beating. So this one could have told you all the day or all the time while you're running up and down there, did you just stay in a normal, what we expect, rhythm, or did you go into an irregular rhythm that we would be concerned about?
Probably a good segue now to talk about dehydration, Doc. I know you're always saying before any event where you're going to work up a sweat, drink water. But there's a wearable monitor that can track sweat content now?
Yeah. How cool is this? Yeah. Remember how we always talk about, all right, here's what we can do to prevent dehydration. Make sure you're well hydrated and make sure you drink, you know, X amount of ounces of fluid. But we all know we sweat differently and our bodies cool differently. Well, now there's a monitor that you can wear that monitors your sweat. And it tells you as you're starting the approaching dehydration. So it's telling you, all right, now is the time to start rehydrating. And it's going to be different in different people. And people say, do we really need that? And I say, think of the firefighters. Think of the guys who are out there working. Don't think of this as a social thing that you're walking around the golf course with, although that's important as well. But this can be really used to prevent injury from somebody who's actually working in these adverse conditions.
All of this stuff will be in the notes. You can see the doctor's notes that we post pretty much immediately after this segment's over. At WGNRadio.com, at Cochran Show on Twitter, and Steve Cochran Show on Facebook. Doc, as usual, you're too smart for this show.
Yeah, right.
Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. Thank you, buddy.
You got it. Take care, you guys.
News next, 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Make America Vote Again. Ooh, the hats are in. We're going to give away the first Make America Vote Again hat if you're willing to go out and chase down some folks to vote in the primary. That's coming up. Also, we have Hawks tickets on the way, but a friend in studio here, and it's always good when he gets up and he comes in. He doesn't have to. He comes in because he likes to hang around with us, and I think that shows the quality person that Adam Andrzejewski is. Good morning to you, sir.
Well, it's great to be on the program, Steve. I'm really happy to be in studio on the show. It's a great week kicking off here across the country. It's National Sunshine Week.
Which means that the governments are going to have light shone upon them. Right? Is that what it means?
Absolutely. This is a celebration of open government and the impact.
Yeah, but they're not open. You have to open them.
Well, it's a lifetime of legacy to keep them open and give them oversight. But this is a celebration. It's sponsored by the American Society of News Editors. And it's a celebration of what we can do with open data on government spending. And look, it's constitutional. It's Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution that says that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time.
Yeah, it's not enough to go, hey, you work for us. You actually have to have you and others do the work. And I think Open the Books has done a wonderful job. What's your website?
It's openthebooks.com.
You can go there anytime. You may have seen the Forbes piece. Forbes did an extensive running of your information, and Real Clear Politics, I know, is rolling out today as well. Having said all of that, you're having a fight with the feds right now at this very time. And what's the fight over?
So we've got three transparency issues in at the Majority Committee, which are the Republican majority at the U.S. House Oversight and Government Reform Committee.
They're terrific.
These guys are they are pressing our issue strongly. So as you know, at the end of last year, we mapped, quote, the swamp that Trump inherited, the 2 million civil service employees, and we mapped them by their employer zip code. Well, we got a big surprise here in January when we got the new 2017 data through the door. The feds redacted a quarter million, 255,000 salaries, and we estimate that amount is $20 billion that they redacted from the response of payroll. And so this committee wants to get to the bottom of it. They issued a 7-page oversight letter last Monday, just a week ago, asking the Office of Personnel Management what is going on over there.
What's your thought on why this was done?
Well, I think it's a classic case of the bureaucracy protecting the bureaucracy. Trump doesn't have his appointment in place over at this office, this HR division of the federal government, and it's a 25-year bureaucrat heading up the organization. I don't think they like that we mapped their salaries last year in 30,000 zip codes across America. We proved that they were very expensive. It was $500 million a day on payroll, and 30,000 federal bureaucrats out-earned every governor of the 50 states. And it was also about their benefits with 8.5 weeks, 43 days of paid time off.
So ridiculous. I mean, the only people that get that kind of time off are members of Congress.
Or if you live in France.
It's insane.
I mean, it was 10 holidays, 13 sick days, and 20 vacation days if you work for the federal government. That's after ridiculous. Just 3 years.
3 years, you get 4 weeks vacation.
Absolutely.
It's outrageous. I want to get to the Illinois perks that you hit up and Open the Books as well, but you were going to say?
I was going to say, in addition to that, the perks. I was blown away by the perks. Some include beautiful homes.
This is the Illinois piece.
Yeah, this is the Illinois piece. I didn't know that was in towns like Lake Bluff and Deerfield. I didn't know that was a perk to get a big home built. Steve, will you build me a big home?
Yeah, no problem. Okay. This is Illinois municipal government. You turn this upside down to find out what these village and municipality folks are getting. It's not just a little bit of health insurance, is it?
No, no. As a matter of fact, we've come to the conclusion that you can't complain. For all the issues in Washington, D.C. and in Springfield, Illinois, you can't complain about those areas if we don't have good government where we live. At Forbes, you can just Google Forbes Big Dogs. It comes right up. We looked at the most highly compensated village and city managers, for instance, across the state, and we found that 90 of them now, 90, out-earn every governor of the 50 states, and that threshold salary is $190,000.
Let's point out a few. Lake Bluff.
Right. Lake Bluff. The village manager makes $223,000, but that wasn't even enough. When he came to Lake Bluff a number of years ago, the city council also awarded him a $200,000 loan, which gets forgiven over the course of time. So right now, an extra $5,000 per year is being forgiven on that loan. So yes, they helped him buy a house.
So over the course of, say, 10 years, that's 50 grand, 20 years, 100 grand, the loan just starts to drip away.
Right. So that was a $200,000.
Well, the $233,000 to manage Lake Bluff. Look, it's a tough job managing any area. It's a tough job managing Mayberry. But $233,000 to manage Lake Bluff, are you kidding me?
Right. Hey, look, the revenues are coerced, right? They don't have to persuade for the revenues. They come from we the people, the taxpayer. So all they have to do is manage a workforce. I'm not saying it's easy, but when you don't have to worry about revenues, where your revenue is coming from, and the sustainability of your business, that's a much easier job than a corporate
What's
executive.
Ron make?
Oh, I just looked that up.
Ron makes around... $215,000, $220,000.
So again, Lake Bluff. The manager of Lake Bluff makes more than the mayor of the city of Chicago.
Wait, that's right. You're saying Lake Bluff? That's not even in the top 10,
right?
According to the research here, Grays Lake, Lake Forest, Northbrook, all in excess of $250,000, $260,000.
And so, Deerfield's in here.
Deerfield didn't make the top 10.
Oh, I thought Deerfield did.
They got the home.
Deerfield, no, I'm sorry, you get a house.
Right. So in Deerfield, the village manager, he makes about $218,000 last
poor guy.
Year. And they gave him a $100,000 loan. And after 15 years, it's all forgiven as long as he stayed on the job. And it looks like he is.
And I thought some might have to do with population. But Grays Lake, 21,000 people. Mayor makes $260,000.
This isn't all north side, right? This has got to all over.
Well, it is all over. It is all over the state, but most highly concentrated in the 6-county northern Illinois counties around Chicago. But it's all in the suburbs, obviously. So we looked at the city and village managers. The top one in the state of Illinois, population 20,000, Grays Lake. So it's not North Shore. You go west of there, and he made $273,000 last year.
Does he have pictures of somebody? How is that even possible? I mean, that's blackmail money. How is that?
I thought your population might have something to do with it. Number two was population 19,000.
And so the smaller the village, the more the money? That seems wrong.
Well, that's the Illinois way. And this is why it should outrage everybody across the state, even if you don't live in Grays Lake. A portion of your income tax dollar flows back on the distributive share to Grays Lake.
Okay, here's what I don't understand. Human nature is what it is. Okay, if I know that the manager of Grays Lake is making, what was it, 270?
273.
273. Why wouldn't I want that job? Why wouldn't there be hundreds of people trying to get that job? So in other words, the person that gets that job why? They must be doing some sort of favors for somebody. I'm not just talking about Grays Lake. I'm talking about all of these. Or they've won a lottery? It makes no sense. It doesn't add up why the village would even pay them that.
Well, the Board of Trustees and the Village of Grays Lake, obviously, they are lap dogs conferring this kind of lavish compensation.
Yeah, but we talk about CEO pay being out of control. What you've shown at Open the Books with your federal government exposure recently, as well as everything going on in Illinois, is it just basic math, exponentially, government spending is out of control, largely because of salaries.
Right. And so in the piece, we actually go into the pay spikes. In the pay spikes, we took a look at a school district in Niles. In Niles, the school district actually runs their own cable TV channel. And they've got one cable TV producer making $102,000. And last year,
I quit.
There's producers. I'm just telling you right now, for people that don't know this, there are producers at every major television station in Chicago that do not make $100,000 a year.
Well, the top one in that school district didn't make $102,000. That was the second. The top one made $220,000 last year.
Okay. My question is going to be to you, if enough of the taxpayers are outraged, what can they do? But let me preface it by saying that this happened in Orland Park last year. The mayor was making $40,000 a year with one vote at a board meeting, which people packed into the village hall to oppose it. All the trustees voted, boom, we're going to triple his salary, $150,000 a year.
Wow.
So with one meeting, so here you have people saying, I'm outraged by this. I'm going to try and make a difference. I'm going to go to a village board meeting and voice my outrage. And the trustees, it falls on deaf ears.
Right. There has to be consequences at the ballot box at the end of the day that people, you and I, we have to get organized to hold the political class in this state accountable for tax and spend decisions.
So here's the deal. We have told people with our Make America Vote Again effort to try to get people out at the primary so you determine who's in the general. In other words, don't just bitch, vote, that you have to get involved and you have to do the research. And I've hawked this website, Ballotpedia, because it's a very simple way to go through and vet candidates to find out what they stand for and what they don't stand for. How do we do this with trustees? How do we do this? People listening in Lake Bluff this morning, I don't know the person that's making that kind of dough, or in Gray's Lake. How do we determine who to talk to, or what's the process on who to talk to make this change?
Well, there's a very simple process, and this process has worked to force out 300 Illinois elected and public officials over the course of the last 5 years. And it's a very simple process. Ask questions. Demand answers. The demand of the answer oftentimes necessitates you networking up to 50 to 100 of your friends and neighbors, relatives into these public meetings. That creates a media event. The press covers it. They cover it favorably. That when you ask questions on where in the law do you get the power to make that expenditure, and when the political class can't answer that, they flee their post. And that is the watchdog model necessary to take across the state.
Here's what I want you to show me next time you come in. Why this is happening. Not that it's happening is because you've already proven that, but why this is happening. How are these individuals getting these jobs? And is it just the wimps in these councils who just go, well, we want somebody to do it. Here's all the money in the world to do it. How do you go home and look yourself in the mirror because you just took a children's playground away so you could pay this person 80% more than they're worth for the job?
So, you know, I had that question, you know, starting out when we started exposing Illinois highly compensated public employees. And I went down to Joliet, Illinois. We had found a city manager there a number of years ago, not currently. He had a 3-year contract worth over $1 million. I wanted to see how he justified it. And I can tell you, he justified it 6 ways to Sunday. In their own heads, they think they're worth even more.
You're not. For anyone listening this morning, if you're any of those folks, I appreciate you listening. You're not. You're not worth the money, and you're stealing the money. That's
well,
it.
Well, and it's even happening on the south side. Like in Thornton Township, Supervisor Frank Zuccarelli, he got a $50,000 pay spike last year.
Just ridiculous.
He went from $173,000 up to $223,000. He's managing a township.
Right. But you can see why people would get a bit discouraged because they're saying, hey, you know what? We want to get involved in the process. We are not for this. And then the board does it anyway, or the township.
But you've got to go to the meetings. It's what you're talking about. You got to go to the meetings. You got to create a media event. You got to get more attention to it until you embarrass them out of it. Because the people, it's just like Springfield, and it's just like D.C. The people that make the rules benefit from the rules. So why would they change the rules?
And you think like in Mount Prospect, you know, you think Mayberry, Steve. When you talk about Mayberry, you think about Mount Prospect. Well, the village manager there got a $37,000 pensionable pay hike last year, up to $248,000, and he made only $210,000 the previous year.
You know, I should probably not come down so hard on the people that are making it, right? Because if you can get it, get it. I still don't understand from a standpoint of conscience and looking yourself in the mirror. But having said that, the people that are granting these salaries, those are the people that are at fault.
These boards, and we elect them. So at the end of the day, the citizens of Illinois, we're culpable, we're responsible. These are the people that represent us, and these are the comp packages that they're conferring.
As usual, Adam Andrzejewski has risen and caused right. my blood pressure to spike like a salary for a municipality.
We love him, though.
You're the best. Politicians hate him, and we love him. Great work by you. OpenTheBooks.com.
Thank you. Thank you. It's Christmas for us. Just remember, it's National Sunshine Week, the celebration of transparency this week, Steve.
Hawks tickets coming up.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Texter for the 847. You need to meet Mike Ellis, the village manager from Grays Lake, an awesome person and an excellent village manager. Listen, I don't know Mike Ellis. He may be an awesome person and an excellent village manager, and I have no reason to doubt this Texter. That job is not worth $273,000 a year. And if the 19,000 people in Grays Lake want to pay that, then it's none of my business. But if you really want the money's worth, or the proper amount of money spent on your village manager, I think we could knock that down a tad. When you're making $50,000 more than the mayor of Chicago, just come on.
For a city 1/21st of the size.
Hawks tickets in just a second. Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing are great partners with the Chicago Blackhawks. Present a pretty good replay.
Hayes moving up the boards, drops it at the line. Deep slot, Gustafson to Kane, top of the left circle. To Gustafson, high slot, to Tays, right circle. One-timer, he scores! And it beats Hudobin under the glove. It's a power play goal. 1-0 Hawks. Here's DeBrusque at center ice to Krejci over the Hawk line, right wing. Fed it back to the slot, and a shot by Chara. They score! And the Bruins have tied it at 1 with 9:03 left in the third period. Back left point, Gustafson to Taves. Top of the right circle to Gustafson. High slot to Kane. Left circle. Shoot, he scores! Patrick Kane's wrist shot from the top of the left circle finds its mark in the top right corner of the Bruin net. It's a power play goal, and the Hawks lead the Bruins 2-1 with 3:16 left in the third. Seabrook from the slot. Shoot, he scores! Seabrook just let it rip from the high slot. A perfect setup by Taves. Here today, the Blackhawks beat the Boston Bruins 3-1.
Ryan Noble's coming up. Also, our Make America Vote Again free hat. We're going to give away these coveted, very limited edition hats starting today. But how about a pair of tickets right now to the Chicago Blackhawks and St. Louis Blues this Sunday? You're running out of games, kids. We only got 2 weeks left.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. You're going to be entered to win four season tickets from Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. That's for next year. Stanley Cup year. I'm guaranteeing it right now.
Yes.
Next season, they're going to win the Cup. Dave, write it down.
Next season?
Next season, they're going to win the Cup, yeah.
I agree with you.
For all the right reasons, Four Seasons, find them online at FourSeasonsHeatingandCooling.com. We have a number of psychics who are calling in already who seem to know the answer to the poem I haven't yet read.
The riddle?
Or the riddle, thank you. Famous Chicagoan. Famous Chicagoan. Ready? Born in Blackpool before World War II, a western suburb house with an Oak Park view, moonstruck by acting, brought a Tony back home. Say anything about Mr. Crane, he was Chicago's very own.
This one I know.
Schwani, you know who it is? Don't say it.
I do, but I'll keep my mouth shut.
Okay. Born in Blackpool before World War II, a western suburb house with an Oak Park view, moonstruck by acting, brought a Tony back home. Say anything about Mr. Crane. He was Chicago's very own.
Those are good clues.
Written by John DeCoss, who, by the way, we're going to have on the show this week because he lived through a surgery.
Yes.
Yeah.
Glad he's okay.
Yeah, we lost some money in the pool. Tom, who is it?
John Mahoney.
John Mahoney, buddy, you're going to the game.
All right.
You and the Blackhawks and the Blues on Sunday. Who will be at going to the game with you?
I'll probably be taking my son.
Excellent call by you. Hold the line. And again, find him online at FourSeasonsHeatingandCooling.com. Andrea, next.
Do you ever read his tweets?
No.
Do you ever tweet?
No.
Why not?
I have other ways of expressing my point of view or implementing a decision. Donald is a more modern individual.
I am more old school. I like to poison people who disagree with me.
Vladimir Putin talking to Megyn Kelly. Our friend Ryan Nobles in just a second. I am wearing the Make America Vote Again hat today. These are very limited edition.
And they're in high demand.
High demand. On the front, you'll see the M-A capital V-A logo, Make America Vote Again. And on the back, it says Make America Vote Again. And you can wear it proudly. And you can go around and make sure that all of your friends and family and everybody else votes. Here's what I'll do. Seventh caller. Starting with the seventh caller, if you can convince Joe or Sandberg that you are absolutely going to vote in the primary, I'll give you one of these very limited edition hats. And we'll do this every morning, 7:20, ideally, a little late today, but we'll do it. We'll do it again tomorrow and every day this week.
And once you vote too, maybe they could take their little "I voted" sticker and
put it on the hat.
Put it on the hat.
Very, very important.
You know?
Again, we recommend ballotpedia.org to vet your candidates. I think we need to give them a pledge. So, Joe, when you get the seventh caller, have them hold on, and we'll make them take a pledge as well. All right, at 7:45, fast becoming CNN's go-to anchor. It's our friend Ryan Nobles. Nice job again this weekend.
Thank you, guys. I was going to call back so I could be the seventh caller. Is that too late for me to do that?
I do need to get you one of these Make America Vote Again hats. You look good in this.
I would probably support that. I think that'd be fun. I saw them on your Twitter feed. They look pretty sharp.
Yeah, and if you go to the Steve Cochran Show page at WGNRadio.com, you can see the hat as well. All right, so Ryan Nobles, the talk of Washington this morning is what?
Well, I think this week it's going to be, what is going to be the impact of this Stormy Daniels saga? And I think that, I think probably there's a lot of people that roll their eyes at this. This is a sex scandal. There's so many, big things happening in this country. But I think that this is quickly becoming less and less about sex and infidelity and becoming more and more about a huge legal problem for the president of the United States on a number of different levels. And the kind of legal problem that could ultimately intersect with the Russia investigation. We had one of our legal analysts over the weekend talking about the fact that, if there are multiple examples of the president having been engaged in these non-disclosure agreements with other women, that this, opens up the opportunity that he could be blackmailed in some way, shape,
sure,
or form.
Sure, of course.
And that becomes a big problem for him. And simply the White House is just not acknowledging this. And then, there's this BuzzFeed report that, we haven't necessarily confirmed yet that says that, they're working actively to prevent this 60 Minutes interview that was supposed to happen last night, and we don't know when it's going to happen now, but that we're basically Stormy Daniels tells all. I mean, she gave an interview to our Nick Valencia this weekend where she's kind of talking about the impact of this.
But this is the Anderson Cooper one, right?
This is the one that Anderson did. And, why would they be working so hard
exactly
to prevent this from coming out unless there was something there? So, yeah, I mean, I think it's easy to kind of roll your eyes and act like this is just not that big of a deal. But I think that it's a lot more than just about the president stepping out on his wife. It's about legal complications that could make it difficult for him to do his job effectively. And I think that's why it's something to keep an eye on.
This is where the line has moved. We're so numb to, these blaring headlines every day. We go, okay, cheated on his wife. It's Melania's problem. No, cheated on his wife. And there was a payoff to keep the woman silent so that his election to the presidency wouldn't be interrupted. The payoff looks like it was illicit and illegal. And if the president was complicit, look, Al Capone, tax evasion, not murdering people, tax evasion. If you take down the president of the United States over a stripper, would you be surprised? Come on.
Oh my God. On so many levels. I mean, the fact that his personal attorney was going out and doing this all on his own without every excuse that the White House and Michael Cohen have given for this arrangement, none of them are appropriate. So even if the president didn't know anything about it, the idea that his campaign or somebody that is his personal attorney just went and did this all on his own, that could stand to put Michael Cohen in a position where he could be disbarred. It certainly could be viewed as an illegal campaign contribution. And if the president did know about it, that's a whole nother level of problem that he's dealing with. So none of it is savory. And not to mention the fact that from the very beginning, every stage of this story has been answered from the White House or from Michael Cohen with a lie. Michael Cohen for months claimed that this didn't happen,
right,
and gave this essentially what appeared to be a fake piece of paper that had Stormy Daniels' signature on it that claimed that the payment never happened, and then he conceded that it actually did. So it's difficult to believe anything that comes out of any of these parties as it relates to this story, and that's why it continues to grow as a problem. It continues to be something that the president and the White House just can't ignore.
Coming back with more with Ryan Nobles in just a second. CNN, of course, is where Ryan Nobles works, and follow him all over social media. Ken is on the phone now. Ken, are you ready to proudly wear a Make America Vote Again hat?
Absolutely. Anything from you, Steve.
All right.
Proudly.
All right. I got to have you take the pledge. Raise either hand. Are you right-handed or left-handed?
I am right-handed, sir, and it's in the air.
I state your name.
I state your name.
What is this, Blazing Saddles?
I can.
Do promise to vote.
Do promise to vote.
In the Illinois primary.
In the Illinois primary.
Next Tuesday, if not before.
Next Tuesday, if not before.
I also pledge. To push.
To brush.
To push.
Oh, push.
To prod.
To prod.
To coerce.
To coerce.
To bribe.
Wait a minute.
To threaten? All right, maybe I'm going too far.
To threaten?
Everyone I know so that they vote too.
Everyone I know so they vote too.
So help me, Illinois, so help us all.
So help me, Illinois, so help us all.
You, my friend, now are the proud owner of the Make America Vote Again hat. Thank you, Ken, very much.
That's a lot to
Thank
go
you,
through.
Thank you, Steve.
Keep Take up care. The good work.
Take care.
I'm telling
granted,
you.
Granted, it's a cool hat, but
I like Ken's laugh. A little bit of evil in there. I like that.
You like because he said, I'll do anything for you, Steve.
Well, no, I'm telling you. You got to have more people like Ken out there making people vote. We have pictures of the hat on Facebook. We do? Okay. Facebook, Twitter, and everywhere else.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Texter said, how do I get a sample ballot I can take into the voting booth with me? You go to ballotpedia.org. Scroll to the bottom, and underneath elections, second thing says sample ballot lookup. Click on that. They'll ask you for an address and a zip code. Your sample ballot for where you're going to be voting will pop up. Print it. Take it in with you. Right on the cover page of Ballotpedia, top story is Illinois primaries up next on March 20th. You click on that. You can get the complete Democratic candidate rundown or the Republican candidate rundown. Ryan Nobles rejoins us now. So did you see the Betsy DeVos thing last night?
I did, yes. Yes, and she was on the Today Show again this morning. So,
and apparently, apparently defending herself after last night saying she's misunderstood. Don't we need the education secretary to be clearly understood?
I would think so, Steve. And I think that where she didn't do herself any favors is that the criticism against her when she took the job was that she wasn't prepared enough to take on this enormous responsibility of being the person that's in charge of the United States education program. And it's one thing for her to be an advocate for it, to be involved in it. You can argue with her policy positions and what she thinks about charter schools and different things like that. But the idea that she doesn't understand kind of the basic machinations of how the education system works was the knock on her during her confirmation hearing. And I think that certainly her detractors are going to look at that interview last night with Leslie and think that that's exactly what what they were worried they were getting is exactly what they got.
And Ryan, especially admitting that she didn't know when Leslie asked her about private or charter schools and public schools improving too, she didn't know if it happened in her home state. But she's long advocated for such programs. It was just a bizarre exchange. Yeah. It's like going to a job interview and not knowing what job you're going for.
Well, we talked about it earlier too. To me, it felt like Sarah Palin and Katie Couric.
Right. And the reason I think that was the most damning is it's one thing for you not to understand as the education secretary of the United States some specific district in some specific far flung state, but Michigan was the state where she was actively involved.
Right.
In rewriting the rules for charter schools. And so if there's any place where she should understand how the implication of this policy is, it would be Michigan because she was part of it. And it seems as though in many ways that she just kind of threw money at this issue based on her view as to how she thinks charter schools should be implemented and then hasn't followed up to see the impact of it. It's one thing that, to have a theory, Bill Gates has done this with education where he throws a ton of money at a thing, hoping that his theory of it will change things. But to not follow up and see if your experiment, for lack of a better word, is working, and then you get the responsibility of being the U.S. Education Secretary, I think that's the reason she's open to so much criticism today. And it's why a lot of members of the Trump cabinet are open to a lot of criticism, because she may not be the exception here. She may be the rule.
What does the NRA, Saddam Hussein, and Kim Jong-un all have in common? They all have the same move. They push the line out as far as possible, and then they give in a little, and you go, well, they gave in, when in fact they've given nothing. is what happened again last night when the White House came forward with their idea of what they could do with gun laws. Forget about what you heard from President Trump a couple of weeks ago. The NRA doesn't scare me. I'm going to stand up to the NRA. It is a weak, wimpy proposal by the White House that'll thrill the NRA, which will actually cause more guns to be bought and do almost nothing for safety. And the NRA and Republicans will go, well, look, we're making changes.
Yeah, and Steve, like we talked about before, you know, I think that if you're hoping for a federal solution to this problem, it's just not going to happen. And, you know, where the change is going to happen is at the state level across the country. That's why, you know, this push that you're having with your listeners to make sure that they vote in their state elections are so important. You know, there just is not the will in the Congress and in the White House to do some sort of broad, major reform of gun legislation in this country. I think the president's proposal, which they're going to formally unveil later today, is an example of that. It's going to be incremental changes on the edges that don't really do a whole heck of a lot. If you're really interested in this, you need to change it in your community. You need to change it at the state level in your state houses. And there's going to be some states that don't touch it at all that might even go the other direction. But I think there's going to be other states that say that we need to do something serious about this. And, you know, the idea that that this was going to compel Republicans in Washington to do something major, I don't think anybody really thought. Despite the fact that this was a huge moment and there seems to be momentum behind it, I just don't think we're going to see anything substantive happen. Even though these kids are going to come march out of Washington here in 2 weeks, and there's going to be a ton of pressure put on these members of Congress, ultimately the power of the NRA and the gun lobby is still too strong.
2 weeks from yesterday, right? 24th?
24th, yep. Saturday.
Oh, Saturday, okay. Ryan, yep. Great as always. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. Have a great week.
That's Ryan Nobles.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should.
Good morning, Dean Richards.
Howdy.
How was yesterday at Presidential Towers, the Dave Annett Memorial Sweat-a-thon?
Oh, it was sweaterific.
So Dave said you wouldn't allow him to come on the show.
Well, I think he came after the show was over.
No. But I just knew, Dean. So I was going to come in and give you a hug. And then I remembered what you had said when you were here Wednesday morning sitting in for Steve, that you really didn't like all these sweaty people coming in there when you were doing the show, which I totally get. So I popped my head in, but I pretty much stayed out.
I didn't see you.
Well, you were doing a show.
I was kidding when I said that I didn't want. I was half kidding. Yeah, but. I didn't mind that I didn't get a sweaty hug yesterday.
Okay. Yeah, I don't blame you.
Next year.
Did you even know the thing was going on? Or did you think they just put you in Presidential Towers for some other reason?
I wonder why there were so many people there in spandex.
Thought it was a theme party?
Usually I'm the only one on a Sunday morning walking around in spandex.
Hey, your friend Dave Schwann's doing the news this morning.
I heard.
Morning, Dean.
He sounds sober today, too.
Well, it's Monday.
Yeah, Schwani was at the big remote broadcast yesterday too.
That was the third one we've done.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
Time goes so quick.
Did he climb?
No,
he didn't have time. You were working,
Steve. We're busy broadcast professionals.
I understand that.
We would have liked to, and believe me, many people volunteered to sit in for me so I could go climb the towers. But I just don't think that's fair to the listeners.
You don't want to put people out.
I walked across the walkway from the parking garage to the site. So
me
I got
too.
Exercise.
I had to walk all the way back to my car. Now, I did stop three times to catch my breath.
So you guys had the burden because you had to sit there and watch everybody walk by and climb. Dean, that's a huge burden.
Dean checked his Fitbit and it said, what, are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah, but they totally ignored us. We walked in. We were all sweaty. We expected bells and congratulations and handshakes. We walked in. There were like 10 of them all lined up talking about popcorn.
Well, he's doing a show.
I know.
And it's a very important topic, the popcorn.
I know, but he was, I don't, we had some popcorn.
How much money did you raise, Dave? Do you know? Thousands.
Hundreds of thousands.
No, it was thousands.
No, but I mean, the American Lung Association raised the figure I'd heard right before we climbed was over $500,000.
Beautiful.
Yeah, we had chairperson of the American Lung Association on the show. You know, when we were actually doing a show,
yes, mm-hmm. Oh, Kristen.
Kristen. Kristen, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she's great.
She's great.
She said that they had already exceeded what their goals were.
That's tremendous.
For the day. So
good job. Nice job, Mary. Nice job, Dave.
And we had 22 people on our team, by the way.
Yeah. Nice job, Patty.
I saw a group photo of the whole WGN radio team, and really, I recognized like three people.
You think there's some ringers?
Well, we
in
got
there?
Some TV. Lourdes came.
Lourdes and Marcus LeShock were with us, and Marcus's daughter.
Yeah.
Wait, Lourdes was there?
Yeah.
Yes. I would have showed up for Lourdes.
They had some star power to the picture.
My point is that I think I need to come into the office a little more because I don't really know anybody.
Right.
Oh, there is that.
It's understandable. Tim McGraw, scary news. We'll get to that. There is also news on 90210. There's news from Bono. There's the weekend box office. And O.J. Simpson was on TV.
I have news from lots of zip codes, not just 90210.
Yes, you do. It turns out O.J. Simpson killed him.
Well, that's it. That's what the story is.
He's not behind you.
I don't even know.
Don't look.
Do I hear Bruno Mali's shoes sneaking up on me?
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 97.
By the way, Dean, I owe you $100.
For what?
John DeCoste lived through the surgery.
Oh, that's good news.
It is. Yeah, well, good for you.
I could use that $100. Who was that again?
John DeCoste, musical director. No, obviously we're thrilled that John is feeling great, and he'll be on the show at some point this week. I think he's going to be back in here next week with his new knee.
Holy smoke. Did he just have one or two knees?
He's got two, but he just had one of them done.
Oh, okay.
No, he still has two knees, though. It's hard to operate with one.
Well, sometimes people like to have them removed.
I told him, put them on backwards. I said, it's a real conversation starter.
Well, I'm happy to hear that.
All right, so what happened to Tim McGraw?
Tim McGraw was on stage in Ireland last night. And at a point, while he's performing a song, sits down on the stage. And then from there, collapses on the stage. And, you know, medical people showed up immediately. He was taken care of. Turns out that he was dehydrated. So, you know, let that be a lesson to everybody. Stay hydrated. How do you get dehydrated in Ireland?
That's a very good point. But also, how do you get dehydrated on stage? Here's what I know. I watched a doctor, a friend of mine, get heat stroke. So once you get to a certain point, no matter how much you know, including, hey, the water's over there, you can get a little delirious.
Yeah, I don't think you necessarily, and, you know, I say this without any medical expertise whatsoever, I don't think that you necessarily feel thirsty when you're dehydrated. It's just
weak, head spinny, yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I have all that most of the time. Should I be concerned?
That's why you know nobody at work.
Yeah.
Bobby Christina is Whitney Houston's now deceased daughter, and her ex is doing what?
Well, the boyfriend of Bobby Christina at the time was Nick Gordon. There was speculation that he had been domestically abusing Bobby Christina at the time, may have contributed to her death. As a matter of fact, in 2016, he was actually found legally responsible for the death of Bobby Christina Brown. Yesterday, he was arrested again for domestic violence with his current girlfriend in Florida. Apparently, a violent argument broke out, and he was arrested on similar charges.
Real tough guy.
Again,
very impressive.
And last June, with another person,
yeah,
another woman.
Coward.
Also arrested on domestic violence charges.
Again, I've said it a million times, don't hit girls. It's ridiculous. What's up with the 90210 situation?
Were you a fan of the original 90210?
Yeah, I liked it.
Not so much.
Not my favorite zip code.
Yeah.
I like other zip codes.
I like a 60611.
I enjoy a 60611. I enjoy a 10026.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys were their target demo, but just thinking.
Are you saying we're too old? Is that the
no,
polite
I'm
way of
thinking,
saying you guys are
well,
too old?
Well, you guys weren't teenage girls. So.
When was it on? Late 90s?
It was on 1990 to 2000.
Oh, 10 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a good show.
Beverly Hills 90210, Tori Spelling and Jenny Garth are going to be getting back together again to do a new TV show, according to People magazine.
Where their kids are the cool ones?
Well, it doesn't say that, but it sure stinks of something like that. It says that they're going to be playing exaggerated versions of themselves from the 90210 show.
How is that different from like Monday?
I don't get it.
Well, we'll find out. They haven't released an air date. They haven't released any information other than that. So
Melrose Place was the spinoff?
Yeah.
And Melrose Place was, most people thought that was a better show.
It was a better show.
Yeah. Because that were people in their 20s hooking up in one apartment building? Was that the deal there?
Apartment complex, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Speak for yourselves. I enjoyed the stonewashed jeans of the original myself.
Oh, the 90210? Yeah. My Tinder for Seniors pitch is still out there. I don't know if anybody's going to pick that up.
I'm hoping that those 80s and 90s fashion come back. Because, they were like, baggy but super comfortable.
Yeah, well, members only jackets, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I tell you, still sexy.
This whole tight jeans craze has to go away.
Yeah.
Turns out they don't make them in husky boy sizes. Anyway, I've gone to the Sears Husky Boy department looking for them. I can't find
them. Funny you say that, because that's one of the profile descriptions on the senior Tinder. Still husky after all these years.
Did you? I shouldn't ask you if you did. I'll just say, when I was a little kid, a chubby little kid.
Oh, the husky? Absolutely, it was a husky.
It was so embarrassing. Like, everybody else got to go to the regular department, and then they would take you by the hand over to the husky.
Oh, you got taken by the hand. Let me explain to you how it went for me. The department store was called James Way, and it was a, a Kmart sort of department store.
Yeah.
And a small town, the only department store in town. My mother, a very direct woman, would take me into the store, and they'd move things around. They'd move stock around occasionally. And she'd just go in a very loud voice for a little 5-foot-tall woman.
Oh, no.
We're short on time. Where are the husky boy clothes?
Oh, no.
Mom.
Yeah, that's bad.
Mom.
I was just so happy to be getting clothes that I was the first one to wear that I didn't really care that it was husky boy size, because I have three older brothers. So normally I just got whatever was about 20 years old.
And did you get husky on the butt patch on your pants?
Oh, yeah. I had butt patches, knee patches. Husky. I started that craze. I started the knee patch craze.
What a terrible name. What's Bono apologizing for?
Bono has a charity in Africa that he started.
The One Charity.
Well, yes, it is. It's exactly O-N-E. What it's called, the One Charity. And it turns out the people that were running this One Charity, where they work with, people with the disease and hunger and, so forth, the people that were running the charity were abusing the people who were coming in to avail themselves of the services, abuse in all kinds of ways, sexual abuse, but also some, one person in particular saying that if they didn't clean the house of the case manager, then they wouldn't get any help. So it all came to light. Bono was profusely apologizing and trying to make it all right.
Weekend box office numbers?
Black Panther, once again, is the number one box office movie. It took in another $41 million. It brings its domestic total now to about $565 million in 4 weeks. The global box office now is over $1 billion. It's taken in over $1 billion. Oprah's Wrinkle in Time opens to a very disappointing number two position on that. That's shocking everyone. Not shocking if you saw the movie or heard the reviews that were very disappointing. But people not that interested in A Wrinkle in Time.
Wow. Finally,
Black Panther yet?
Yes, I did. It's tremendous.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's tremendous. I was part of the $1 billion and paid.
Wakanda forever, Steve.
That's right on.
And I'm talking about the Northwestern suburb.
So am I.
Yep.
The bizarre 2006 book and interview, OJ's If I Did It, where he sat down with publisher Judith Regan and went through a series of question and answers about allegedly, hypothetically, explaining how he would have committed the murders, aired in its entirety last night on Fox, in which Simpson said, hypothetically, He and someone named Charlie drove to Nicole's with a cap, gloves, and a knife under the seat and parked in the alley. They walked around the property. Ron Goldman appeared, saying he was at the restaurant where Nicole dined and was returning sunglasses. Simpson says he got angry at Ron, thinking he was there on a date with Nicole, and started yelling at him. Nicole came out. Things got heated. She told OJ to get the F off her property. And then he says Nicole fell and hurt herself. In fact, he swung the knife at her and hit her in the face with a blunt end. And he says he doesn't remember much after that. Except coming to the conclusion there was a lot of blood around.
He was talking about he was talking about how there was blood and, quote, blood and stuff all over. And then breaks into laughter while he's telling the story.
Yeah.
Breaks into like he can't control his laughter.
2006.
Give him airtime.
And how does an interview like this not be on the air for 11 years?
There was some sort of lawsuit involved, wasn't there? I think there was a restraining order. I don't remember the specifics, but the Goldman family and the Brown family didn't want it on. They didn't want him getting any more publicity, and they thought he was just chasing cash and then hiding it.
Trying to sell that book that he had out then.
It's just awful. Awful, awful, awful. And, of course, he could literally come on this show right now and say, yep, Steve, I killed him.
They couldn't do anything. Right?
Double Jeopardy.
Double Jeopardy. But my favorite part of the game Jeopardy, by the way.
The Double Jeopardy?
Yeah.
I'm more of a...
sorry.
It's just wrong.
That's how I deal with pain, Steve.
I understand. Believe me, I understand. All right, we'll see you tomorrow.
Yes, you will.
Coming up, headlines with Andrea and Eddie Johnson, police superintendent. He's got some things he'd like to get off his chest. And we'll talk to him about this community policing thing and how much power they will have. Because he's not too happy about that. Headlines next, 720 WGN.
I'm glad to announce that we've charged 42-year-old Shamari Leggett with first-degree murder of a police officer, as well as several other charges, including unlawful use of a weapon by felon, armed violence, and drug possession.
The thug that killed Paul Bauer never should have been on the street. And today, Eddie Johnson, along with Mayor Emanuel, gun violence prevention advocates, all calling on Governor Rauner to sign the Gun Dealer Licensing Act, and the police superintendent joins us now. Good morning, Eddie. How are you?
I'm good, Steve. Thanks for having me this morning.
Appreciate you being on. I haven't had a chance to talk to you since this nightmare, but condolences on Commander Bauer.
Well, thank you. We really appreciate it. I have to give a shout out to the entire city of Chicago because they really did a great job of supporting us through this.
State bill, or I should say Senate bill, 1657. Explain what the Gun Dealer Licensing Act is.
Okay, well, what it essentially does, Steve, is it allows the state to audit gun dealers as opposed to the federal government because they just don't have the resources to do it. And it also provides resources for training employees so that they can detect straw purchasing when it occurs in the stores.
So this, Andrea, tell me if there's anything here that you could see that's even remotely controversial. Mm-hmm. This would require criminal background checks for all gun shop employees. Seems logical. Training to help gun shop employees. Yeah, right. Training to help gun shop employees identify buyers. You just said. If they're trouble, if it's a straw purchase, require basic store security measures to help prevent theft. And strengthen cops' abilities to catch those responsible for illegal gun trafficking. How can anybody have an issue with this?
Common sense.
All we're asking is to pass common sense gun legislation. Because here in Chicago, listen, our violence problem is really a gun problem that's focused in two areas of the city. We lack the mental culture of accountability, you know, to hold them accountable. And the second is, you know, we have far too many guns. You know, CPD routinely every year seizes more guns than New York and L.A. combined. And that's not because we're two times better than them. It's because of the availability of illegal weapons in the streets of Chicago.
Superintendent, you've been fighting this battle since you became superintendent about closing loopholes. It seems as though you and the hardworking men and women of the department arrest these suspects and then they're out either the next day, whether it's for a carjacking or a gun crime or a drug crime or whatever it might be. Do you think, unfortunately, with this incident, with the death of Commander Bauer, that some sort of action can finally be taken to increase the penalties for whether it's a gun crime, a drug crime, or whatnot?
Yeah, I do, because as a matter of fact, I think Commander Bauer's death and the incident that happened in Florida with the school children are the two things that's really helping push common sense legislation now. Because before, you know, these gun laws have been trying, they've been trying to get these things passed for like 15 years. And it's just ridiculous to me that it's taken this long. You know, the idea is to keep the public safe. The idea isn't to strip hardworking Americans who can legally have weapons in their homes. It's not, the idea is not to take them away from them, but we have to pass common sense gun legislation to help keep this country safe.
Is Indiana doing anything to help?
No. You know, unfortunately, you know, people ask me all the time, what is the difference between Chicago, New York, and L.A.? Well, we sit in between Wisconsin and Indiana, who have some of the most lax gun laws in this country. You know, so we do know that there's an illegal flow that comes in from those two states. And you know, we're working hard with ATF to close the loopholes to that also.
As this law is gaining some steam today, again, Governor Rauner, I'm urging you to sign this, the Gun Dealer Licensing Act. But it goes to this argument you always hear, well, let's enforce the laws that are already on the books. You know, Superintendent, what laws are you not enforcing?
Well, we enforce everything. The problem is, Steve, is that when it goes to court,
right,
there's just so many different ways for them to avoid the system. And let me say this. If people think that these guys toting around these illegal weapons don't know the law, you're fooling yourself, because they do. They know all the loopholes, and they use the law to get around being held accountable. So we just have to do a better job of holding them accountable, and that's why I'm also urging the governor to sign that legislation. You know, we can't wait. This has been going on for years. We need to do it now.
And Superintendent, the week before, ironically, the week before Commander Bauer was shot, you were speaking publicly about increasing the penalties for carjackings, specifically juveniles, because so many of these older gang leaders or whoever they are instructing these, you know, younger people, because they do know the laws and they know how the system works, to carjack using these crimes, these cars. Correct. For other crimes, right? And they're young, they'll be out the next day.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, so we fought hard to get the repeat gun offender bill passed in Springfield last year, and we're successful. So I want to thank them for that. But you're absolutely right. You know, we know that juveniles are committing a ton of these carjackings. You know, and I recognize that the idea isn't to send them to prison for the rest of their lives. But the bottom line is, there has to be some accountability. You know, we had that retired police officer that was the victim of attempted carjacking around Christmas. The three individuals were all juveniles. We caught all three of them and arrested them on Friday. Saturday, they go to court. Sunday, they're released, and we catch one of them that Sunday night carjacking someone else with an illegal gun in his possession. You know, and that's just ridiculous. That shows you that we're sending the wrong message out there.
Yeah, and don't count on this being a problem that the legal system is going to handle. You know, there's a lot of good lawyers out there, and a lot of good lawyers who are doing the right thing every day. And everybody is entitled to a defense. But there is a group of lawyers who readily take these cases, who know the loopholes, who know the angles to play, who put these thugs back on the street. And those murders are on their hands. You can't stop those people from playing those angles and playing the game, but you got to do what you can do, and you can sign this law today, Governor.
That's right, and it's up to us, the leaders and the legislators, to hold these individuals accountable, and today is the day to do it. You know, like I said, Steve, we can't afford to wait, because this has been going on far too long, and, you know, it's almost like when these laws were drafted, and I know they were drafted years ago, but things are different now, and these laws need to catch up to today's times.
And the NRA is obviously not helping in this case. The White House backing down from what they talked to before just echoes what you're talking about. We can't tell, you know, we can't count on the feds to do this for us.
No, you know, we have an obligation as leaders in this city to help keep the people in this city safe. So we can't sit around and wait around for somebody else to do it. We have the ability in this state and in this city to do it. That's why we're urging the governor to sign this common sense legislation.
And Superintendent, in the wake of all this, too, we've seen more police here on Michigan Avenue in the downtown areas, and officers on the L as well.
Yeah, you know, we committed a couple of years ago to hiring roughly 1,000 more officers to give us the capacity to be able to do the things that we need to do to keep the city safe. And I'm happy to say, you know, we hired 1,100 last year. As a matter of fact, today is the last day to sign up for the May 5th test. So, you know, those people that want to see change, I invite them to sign up. You know, the deadline is midnight tonight. So come on and be part of that change, you know, because we do need to put more police officers out there. And believe me, that's not the overall answer to the violence that we're seeing in the city. You know, we have to do better at educational opportunities, job opportunities, mental health, all of that. But this is one of the pieces that we need to get right.
Well, yeah, and I've said this a million times, too. There's an immediate, a midterm, and a long-term solution. The long-term solution is make sure the kids are educated, make sure there's a father figure in the homes. All of those societal things, the midterm solution is to make sure there's a job and to make sure they see a better future, that joining a gang is not the best answer. But the immediate future is what the cops keep talking about. Help us help you. Help us get these guns off the street.
That's it, Steve. You know, because the men and women of this department do a phenomenal job at arresting these bad guys. We just need help in holding them accountable. You know, I get a lot of credit for the success that we saw last year, but that credit is deserved by the police, the men and women that are out there on the street, the community partners that we have, and the elected officials and business partners that we have. So, you know, it takes a village to do this. CPD cannot do this alone.
One more thing before I let you go. Commander Eddie Johnson's on the phone. You are very well thought of. Superintendent Eddie Johnson, I apologize, is on the phone. You're very well thought of amongst the rank and file, and I know you're proud of that, as you should be. But I do believe you're paying the price a little bit by way of the damage that was done in the department before you. You know, like any other job, one bad cop ruins it for everybody. And the best case scenario is to find that tiny fraction of the city's police force that aren't doing the right thing and to get rid of them.
Yep.
However, I was going to say, Eddie, the best people to do that are you guys.
Yeah, you know, listen, we recognize that we have some bad apples out here. The majority of police officers are out there doing the right thing. But when we have bad actors, then we hold them accountable and they pay the price for it. Because if you're out here committing crimes or engaging in egregious behavior, I will take that star back away from you. And I think that we're best equipped to be able to identify and deal with those individuals.
Yeah, and this community oversight idea. Look, I think it's important for the community to have a say in how the police are doing. I think it's a huge mistake to give a community board the authority over the superintendent's job and major decisions made in the police department that they don't have any law enforcement experience over. So where is that measure?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. That's just ridiculous to give a civilian board the ability to create policy, crime-fighting strategies. They have no professional acumen in that field. That's like telling us we should go into a hospital and tell surgeons how to do their
right,
job. We have no
right.
You know, so why would you do that? But you're right. They should have some input in and have a voice in things, but to have oversight and to tell the police department how to do their business is just ridiculous.
Superintendent, can I just switch gears here and say, I think, what's on all of our minds, how great you look? I mean, I'm sure you're feeling great.
Yeah,
you're doing your workout.
speaking of surgeons, he actually used one.
Right.
How you feeling?
I feel great, and I appreciate all the well wishes and thoughts and prayers that have been sent my way. But, yeah, I'm back. I'm almost where I was in the gym before I had the surgery.
Wow, how about that?
It's amazing.
Nice.
It was a quick bounce back, so I'm just going to continue and keep doing what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, I feel great, and I appreciate you all thinking about me.
We got your back, man, and keep up the good work.
All right, I will.
All the best, Superintendent Eddie Johnson. Commander Paul Bauer, you know, if nothing else, for his daughter, for his wife, for all the people closest to him,
mm-hmm.
Let's get this done. A very simple law that does very minor things.
Absolutely.
But important things.
Mm-hmm.
In the Gun Dealer Licensing Act, it's Senate Bill 1657. Tell the governor you want it signed immediately.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
You know, we love Sandberg. I mean, she's good, nuttier than a box of candy at Christmas time.
Fantastic.
But she's a great stepmom, and she threw a big party along with the family this week. Friday night, a big game truck party. I don't know. It's a money laundering thing.
Video games.
Video game party, and there's pictures all over. Pictures all over, and you can see them, the whole gallery. Where is it, Sam?
It's at WGNRadio.com. It's also on the Steve Cochran Show Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah,
and
so check it out.
We co-hosted it. It was a very modern family party with me, Patrick's mom, and then Patrick's dad and stepdad, who did very little, honestly. But
and because of my...
So they're not in a lot of pictures.
They're not. Yeah, they're not.
Because of my feeling on the goodie bags.
Oh, yeah.
When Abigail Grace starts having a bunch of kids over for birthday parties, only two, but when she starts having some kids over for the birthday parties, I'm going to volunteer to do the goodie bags.
Oh.
And then in each goodie bag, I'm going to put a card, and when they open the card, it's going to say, it's Abigail's party, get out.
No.
That's going to be the goodie bag.
Don't do that, Steve.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm going to do.
Why don't you just do like stand-up for them? That will be their gift.
Yeah, they would love that.
Because two-year-olds understand me.
Mm. You can give them Make America Vote Again hats.
No, we're short on those. Make America Vote Again hat on my head. We get to the 9 o'clock hour next on 720 WGN.
Make America Vote Again today. Mava, vote today and tomorrow. Mava, come on. Everyone, Mava, it's democracy, freedom, do it right here and now.
Here's what we know. We know that the Illinois primary determines who's in the general election for all offices. And we also know that if you don't vote in the Illinois primary, you are not expressing whom you would like to have run in the general election. It could be summarized by, if you don't vote, don't bitch, but that seems too simple. So I highly recommend, no, I urge, no, I plead, no, I beg, no, I cajole.
Oh, cajole.
Yeah, I cajoled the heck out of this one.
Cajoled in a long time.
Get out there and vote in the primary next Tuesday. Can you still early vote?
Yes, you can.
When does
Steve?
Early vote close?
Early voting closes, I believe, in a week. Let me get you the exact date.
Well, I hope in a week, because Tuesday is the election.
Yep. Monday, I believe, is the last day.
All right. Well, you tell me. You look that up and tell me on your fancy lookup machine.
Okay.
But here's the deal. 19% of Illinois residents voted in the 2014 midterm primary. 19. Mm-hmm. Now, let's do the math. That means 81% didn't. That's a lot. 4 out of 5 people in Illinois did not vote in 2014's midterm primary. Therefore, 1 out of 5 people had the total say in who made it to the general election and caused the rest of us to have that choice instead of a choice you may have made. So I don't care if you're Democrat, Republican, whatever. I just want you to vote. I want you to care enough to get out there. Ballotpedia.com is .org. Ballotpedia.org is where you go to get a sample ballot that you could print for your specific zip code and take into the voting booth. And if you click on Illinois, you will be able to see Republican and Democratic races and vet every single one of them.
It is the last day to early vote is the 19th, which is the day before the primary.
Next Monday.
Yeah, and if you say you don't have a chance to do that and you're still not registered, you can register to vote on election day and vote at the same time. So it's 2 for 1. And there's a great
so there's no reason not to be registered.
No, and the State Board of Elections website is elections.il.gov, and it gives you dates, where you can vote, near your home. You just punch in your zip code, and it tells you every place you need to know to go to vote.
Charlie's on the phone. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, Steve. How are you doing today, man?
Good. How are you?
Hey, good, good. I'm an election judge, okay? And I tried one in the hat, didn't get it, but we got to get people out, man.
Hold on a second. What do you mean you didn't get a hat? I can get you a hat. I know people.
But if you could get me one, I will wear it next Tuesday.
That's what I'm talking about. That's a commitment.
Okay. But here's the thing. The guys I work with are so upset at me because I've been harping on them now for a month. We got to vote. We got to vote. You got to get out. You got to get out. And it's the youngsters that aren't getting out either, Stephen. That's what worries me.
I totally agree. Listen, you do it. You're out there volunteering. You see the people that do come in. And you know this, Charlie. The far right and the far left are going to show up. So if you want the most extreme viewpoints from either party to represent your viewpoint, well, then stay home. But if you really want to take part in the privilege of being an American and the process, you have to vote in the primary.
Exactly. You know, and the thing that gets me, too, is people say, oh, it's a local election. Hey, local has a lot more influence on you than the presidential. Amen. I mean, no offense, but...
No, it does.
You know.
It does, absolutely. You know, Charlie, a friend of mine had the hula hoop theory, which I love. You stand, take a hula hoop, drop it in your driveway.
Yeah.
And don't leave the hula hoop, but turn around in a full circle. Take a look at what you can see. What can you see? You can see your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what affects your neighborhood? The school board?
Yep.
You know, streets and sand, garbage pickup, mail.
Water.
Yep.
Water.
Yeah.
All of those local offices Those are what is going to affect you every single day. The state legislature is going to affect you every single day. Congress is going to affect you every single day. Trump's a headline. The rest of it is what impacts your life every single day. That's why this is so important.
100% right, 100% right. You're county people, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And that's
why I like this website, Charlie, this Ballotpedia, because it breaks all these races down.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I checked it out. Sure does. Oh, and by the way, I voted early last Tuesday. I can't vote often anymore, but at least I can vote early.
There you go.
Charlie, getting it done, man. Where are you election judge?
In Joliet.
All right, buddy. I appreciate it. Hold the line so we can get your information. Charlie got himself one of these.
A Mava hat.
Yeah, Make America Vote Again hat.
Somebody described it over the weekend, Stephen. I kind of like this analogy. You know when you have these brackets in the NCAA tournament and you get really all the points, you know, in the early games? Mm-hmm. So it's not just picking the big winner, which I guess would maybe equate to, say, president or something of that nature, a higher office. You get all the points by voting for, you know, the initial games in the tournament.
You know what? Make it a bracket.
Exactly.
Whatever. Make a game out
there
of
it. There you go.
But I'm telling you, you must vote in the primary. And again, 19%, 16% in Cook County. Are you kidding me? So if you've got a kid or a grandkid in your life who's 18 years old, I remember how excited I was the first time I got to vote. First presidential race. Dave, yours was Grover Cleveland. Mine was mine was Ronald Reagan. It was exciting.
Mm-hmm. Mine was George Bush.
There were no bumper stickers because there were no cars. Well, they put them on the buggies, you know.
They were in the town square. Hear ye, hear ye.
It's 9:18. It's almost baseball season. We are the home of your Chicago White Sox. Home opener is when, Dave?
Home opener is April 5th.
And? April 4th.
April
5th. You're right.
Thursday, April 5th. But the season opener is, let's see, it would be, today is the 12th. It's 17 days from today.
It's exciting.
The White Sox in Kansas City. And we'll have the Sox tonight under the lights from Arizona at 8:30. And the Mariners.
Do you know how the White Sox got their name? The nickname, the White Sox?
The Chicago White Sox?
Yeah, do you know how they got the name?
Yeah, they were the White Stockings, right?
Oh, those were the Cubs, actually.
The Cubs were the White Stockings. Mm-hmm. The Cubs changed their name from White Stockings to Cubs. Comiskey, Charles Comiskey, Chuck as Dave called him, moved the team from St. Paul to the South Side and named them the White Stockings, which were changed later on to the White Sox.
There you go.
You know how the Cubs got their name?
Oh, what were they originally?
They were the Chicago Whales. They were the White Stockings. They were the Whales.
And then after that?
What about the Colts? Remember that?
The Colts?
Yeah. You covered them when they were the Colts, didn't you?
That was what?
1890. In 1897, the Colts became known as the Orphans.
Oh, right.
And then when Frank Selle took over managerial duties of the young roster in 1902, a local newspaper dubbed the Cubs the Cubs. I think everybody thinks, well, not everybody, but there are people who think the Cubs were a takeoff on the Bears. Well, mm-hmm. The Bears came later.
Yep. And they were originally the Cardinals, weren't they?
Who?
The Bears.
No, the Bears were the Decatur Staleys.
But then they were the Cardinals.
No, the Cardinals were another team. They played on the South Side. At Old Comiskey Park.
Oh.
And then they moved to St. Louis, and then they moved to Arizona.
Damn. Do you know how the Arizona Diamondbacks got their name? Oh, never mind. It's 9:20. Before we move on, what was I going to do? What did you just tell me to do, Joe?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Got a weird thing to show you, so tell all the boys and girls. Word up, cameo. That's the best. Crank it up, Joe. Hey, you know what? Do your dance. Do your dance. Do your dance quick, mama. I haven't lost a step. I've lost two steps. It's 9:26. We continue. We got a quick you must pick one, formerly called Three Things. I have three stories. You must pick one, and I'll give you the story. Okay?
Okay.
Here are your headlines. 12 surprising effects of daylight savings time. Seems timely.
Mm-hmm.
Law-abiding Canadians are turning into cheese smugglers. Or Ohio pig farmer stops watching the news after Trump's election and says it's awesome. Right, which one do you like?
I'm saying Canadians and cheese.
Canadian cheese?
Daylight savings.
Yeah. Well,
daylight savings?
Timber says daylight savings. I say the cheese one for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, cheese. I think we're
like
lost,
I'll
though.
Be telling you the cheese story on my own time.
Oh.
All right, 12 surprising effects of daylight savings time. Only do a few of these because, well, we don't have time to do all 12.
You know, this was good because I came back from Florida and I was still on Eastern time. And so I didn't have to switch my brain.
Well, you know what's weird is all of the clocks and watches and things in my life all automatically reset. I didn't even have to think
every
about
one
it.
Of them?
Yeah.
Even your car?
Does this count as one and two? And now you're going to do the others or...?
No, this is
no. I like your guys' story. It's great.
Increased spending. This should apply to you.
Oh, okay, good. Hold on, let me log off.
It's a combination platter. Increased spending and more cyber loafing on the day after daylight savings kicks
in. Did Andrea buy a mattress?
Hey, why should that be any different than any other day?
Because you're tired and all you want to do is what pleases you, and therefore you cyber loaf at work.
You guys assuming just shopping's pleasing me.
Hello. How about a higher risk of heart attacks? Many studies have shown that daylight savings time is associated with increase in heart attacks, and Mondays are your big heart attack day.
Oh, right.
24% increase in the number of heart attacks on the Monday after daylight savings time.
Oh, my gosh.
I should ask Doc Most about that.
Probably because we get less sleep.
Well, you're stressed because you're late.
You lose an hour, yeah. Well, a couple of people were late at the TV station.
We lost
on
an hour yesterday and then climbed 180 floors.
Blah, blah, blah. Look at you, hero.
If anybody
that's what I'm saying. I mean, it would seem the risk would have been greater on Sunday than Monday.
Hey, I didn't do this study. Missed appointments. No surprise there.
Yeah.
Because you're on the wrong clock.
Right.
How about more car accidents?
Because you're tired?
Yeah, I think that's probably true. In 2001, an American study, which was repeated in 2012 and in 2018, echoed the same sentiment, finding that on the first day of daylight savings time, road accidents increased 16%.
Ooh.
A couple of days later, the rates were still up. One study concluded that a year-round daylight savings time could reduce motor vehicle occupant fatalities by 195 a year just in New Zealand.
So why do we still turn back or still do this?
It's literally a political thing.
It is.
It's all politics.
Stupid. It's killing people, obviously, with heart attacks, traffic accidents.
It's killing people.
Right.
This might be my favorite one, and then we'll take the break. Fewer koala collisions.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay.
One study looked at how daylight savings time affected human-wildlife interaction. Specifically, koala vehicle collisions. Koalas are largely nocturnal. They often cross the road during the evening or at night.
Is this like an Australian study?
Yes. This is another Australian-New Zealand study. By shifting traffic patterns to times when it wasn't dark, the researchers find that daylight savings time could decrease collisions with koalas by 8% on the weekdays and 11% on the weekends. So again, we're killing humans, and we could save koalas.
Ugh. So glad you read the story.
Isn't it clear that we need to have daylight savings time year-round?
I thought the death rate for koalas was way down in DuPage County.
Koala deaths in DuPage.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are some positives
see?
There.
See, aren't you sorry you didn't read the Canadian cheese story?
I am. Some of the candidates are running on it. You saw them at the parade yesterday. They're running on the koala issue.
I know. That was a big, big, big topic yesterday.
Speaking of candidates, Jeannie Ives is going to be on the show Friday. Is she in or on the phone? On the phone. Okay. Got some things I'd like to discuss with her.
I'm sure. No, me too.
I grew up precisely across the street from the iconic Carnegie Deli. I kind of had a choice, I think. Become a chef or become a dancer and then be a Rockette.
Live live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, show 1101. Chef Alex Guarnaschelli is here. She says if this interview goes well, I get a table at Butter. Is that right?
Absolutely.
How are you?
I'm good.
Nice to see you. You know, the Turbo Pot came up the other day.
Okay.
Our Mr. Fix-It guy was talking about Instapot and Turbo Pot, and he went on with Turbo Pot like it was the greatest thing that God has ever created.
So they sent me all the Turbo Pots, you know, all the different sizes, and I always was explaining, I always kind of test products by putting them in my kitchen and seeing what happens. Does my daughter pick one up and cook with it? What does she do with it? Does she like it? So the ultimate Turbo Pot test was already conducted in my own home.
And did it meet daughter's approval?
It did, to such an extent that I cooked something else in another pan, and she said, "You should have used the Turbo Pot." Oh,
pay attention, mother.
And I thought, "Oh my God, it's the messaging is actually sinking in the most organic way." So I've been cooking with these a lot to kind of develop a relationship to the product, and they really are amazing.
So why are they so great?
Well, for me, honestly, just straight up, time is always is the biggest commodity. Sure. And so it just gets stuff done, and it's stuff that we are often waiting in the kitchen
so
to happen.
So what's the deal with the fins? Explain it to an idiot, and that would be me in this particular scenario. What's the deal with the fins on the bottom?
Well, it's extremely light. Actually, yeah. I'm holding one. I'll do it for a sound effect.
Nicely done.
You're on TV, too.
So yeah, you're on TV here, so you can pick
great.
It up.
Oh, great. Even better. And so literally, it looks like it's going to weigh 10 pounds.
Yeah.
And it's straight out of Star Wars. And it's also quite elegant. It's actually really light, easy to handle. And this is basically like a Fast and Furious form of a car. And what it does is it just literally accelerates the cooking process.
So it's aerodynamic. The heat is convective. In
correct.
A faster way?
It's like a correct. Turbo boost.
I love how you're an idiot, but you say right. convective and aerodynamic when talking about spaghetti.
See that?
So
looking for that table at Butter.
It's worked. You've got it. I mean, table for two, or are we talking like six
party
or
of 20? this is great stuff. And anytime, even for someone at your level of chefery, when something cool technologically comes along, it's a great day.
It is. I mean, I remember, for example, when I first got my hands on a microplane grater, which everybody or a lot of people have now, and thinking, this is so basic and simple, and it changes garlic, ginger, grating, everything, lemon zests, whatever else. I think this product is something that speeds up a repeat that we often encounter in the kitchen. For example, boiling a pot of water to boil some eggs, boiling an egg, making pasta, blanching vegetables, stuff that all home cooks and professional cooks
sure.
are doing a lot. It's not like, oh, you're going to cook a quail egg better in this.
And nobody wants to wait. Nobody wants to wait.
Well, I have a question about the product. It cooks makes the water boil faster, but then does it cook the? Do you have to adjust your cooking time with it?
You do for some things.
Because I read my pasta says on there, you know, al dente, 6 to 7 minutes on the bag.
We're gonna have to have disclaimers
okay.
on all the packages.
If you're using a Turbo
to speed
pot,
it up.
Only
yeah,
3 minutes.
I think that an egg hard boiled in 7 minutes.
Wow.
And you know what?
Perfect in time
that's
for Easter.
That's a basic thing. It's not like, oh, well, right. I need this magical gadget that I'm going to use once a year. This is something that you kind of build into your everyday. And I mean, it surprised me putting it in my own apartment and just cooking with it. And my boyfriend cooked with it. My daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And
wait, this is interesting to me. You let your boyfriend cook for you?
Well, I didn't say that.
She said she lets him cook.
I don't want to break up.
Right.
So no.
He's a great guy, but stay out of my kitchen.
In all honesty, we dated for 3 or 4 months, and he said, I'd really like to make you dinner. And I said, that's nice. Literally.
You say that's nice, don't?
Yeah. It's
yeah.
just too much for me. I'm a professional. I'm a chef, but I've accidentally stumbled upon another aspect to my career, which is professional eater.
Yeah.
And then there's this other side of me. I have a 10-year-old. She's a tough crowd. And I like to cook at home. And so I do a lot of different kinds of cooking. I cook on Iron Chef America in Kitchen Stadium, the ultimate pressure cooker.
Okay.
I fry an egg for my daughter at home. I run the gamut of most relaxed and chill to hideously anxiety producing.
You ever throw anything in the microwave right out of the freezer? Just heat that bad boy up.
No.
And do you when you go, I mean, when you do, I know you don't have any free time, but if you go to a restaurant or you go to a friend's house and someone accidentally cooks for you, do you kind of go, do you find yourself judging it or just thinking, you know what, I'm here, I'm going to eat it.
You're from New York. If it sucks, you'll tell them.
Yeah, I'm kind of mean underneath it all. I have a mean streak when it comes to food.
That's called being direct. I know. Some of us are really good at being direct.
What did I say? What did I say when before?
Yeah, you said just like Sandberg.
I said, you are like Alex here for us because you're direct.
Saving time, telling people the truth.
I turbo pop my whole life.
There you go. Look at you.
But I know whenever anybody cooks for me, particularly friends or family, absolutely not. I am off duty. And I really enjoy when anybody does. I never get invited. Will you invite me to dinner?
Dave will
invite
you.
I'd be glad to. Absolutely.
Now, here's the thing, though. Dave is all kale all the time.
Oh, really?
And a lot of wine.
Not all the time.
Can we have pasta with a kale pesto?
Absolutely. Okay. Oh, it sounds great.
That's crazy for you. That's going way off your diet. But look how great he looks. He's 91 years old.
No, he's not.
I know not when quite. To bow out of a dialogue. I come from a complicated family.
You know, there's a whole page of your quotes, which I love watching you on Chopped, because I always think I know when you're going to, I don't want to say be mean, I always know when you're going to say something, but then you turn it around and go, this is fantastic. And I breathe a sigh of relief. I'm like, oh my, of relief. But one of my favorite quotes from you is, the hardest thing for me is restraint.
It's true. I mean, I think it's also really hard when you're in a competition and you're on TV and you really want to show your best stuff. That often translates into, let me pile a lot of ingredients on the plate to show that I know how to use a lot of stuff. I've done the same. I'm cooking and I'm like, I'm going to put caviar and truffles and gold leaf and bananas and kiwis. And then
and
I look down and I'm like, this was supposed to be a steak dinner and it looks like a fruit salad. All right. So this is easy to fall into, which is like, if I put more, it's going to be more and it's going to have a really big impact. And sometimes I get in there now and I'm like, I'm just going to fry an egg.
Right. Now, here's the thing. This one here, Sandberg, executive producer of the program, she watches the show all the time, or watches you all the time.
I watch everything she's on.
Yeah.
I also like when she's on Beat Bobby Flay.
With her husband. Mm-hmm. So it's a couples thing.
Okay.
Do you have more couples watchers, or is it individuals sitting there yelling at the TV?
I think it's a lot of families, first of all, with their kids.
Do you watch it with the kids?
Oh, we do. That's the other thing. The cooking shows, when Abigail, he has a granddaughter that's 2.5. When she's a little bit older, he'll realize the cooking shows are good for the whole family because everyone can watch. And Pat does it. My husband likes to pause the chop basket. They reveal the ingredients. Then we all have to go around the room and say what we would make with the ingredients before we get to the next, that before he hits play, and then we criticize. I like when Alex, the shots of her with the fork on the plate when she's kind of like piecing through what she's been served, or how come I didn't get a radish and they got the radishes.
We always wonder who's going to get, if there's someone who leaves an ingredient off, how that's going to shake down, because we don't know.
You don't know?
No, we're not. No, all of that, it all happens. So much of what happens on the show is organic, and that's why I think the show resonates. Because people say to me, oh, they know what's in the basket. Oh, they know, or you know, or whatever. Is it not blatantly obvious with the anxiety level that they open the basket and said,
oh my God.
Ted says, your time starts now, and that's it. We once had a light go out right when they opened and took out all the food. So it took like 5 or 10 minutes for them to repair the light on set.
And this is after they saw the ingredients.
They changed the basket.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
So are there backup baskets? There must be.
I assume there seem to be, like, sometimes they don't get an ingredient or something doesn't pan out. I mean, I think it's not like a rolling Rolodex of backup plans. No.
It's funny.
No, it's very...
gummy bears in my purse.
I get frustrated with the gummy bears or the gummy worms. It's like, come on, when are you ever going to use that in your main dish? But
Abigail's too. Who's your favorite chef? Like, whose food would you love? Who would you love to make you dinner tonight? Chef, a name we'd know.
Wow, that's a hard one. I'm in Chicago, so I'm going to pick a Chicago chef, and I'm going to pick a very well-known chef because my mother is a cookbook editor, and she edited every one of Rick Bayless's books.
Yeah.
And I went.
Oh, that hack.
Yeah, that two-bit operator.
Well, hope he has some kind of success someday.
And in 1990, I ate at Frontera Grill.
Is that right?
And I had grilled skate. And I had never eaten skate, and when I saw the way it looked, I couldn't believe they tried to grill it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It changed my life. And so I would go and eat at, he has an open fire restaurant now, mm-hmm. right, where he cooks.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
He opens a new room every 6 or 7 minutes. You know, it's a big city.
Yeah. I just want to say, my husband, the first meal he ever made me was skate.
as well.
Oh, is that right?
So, mm-hmm. Sounds and it was life changing. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's not an easy thing to throw down.
No, and I'd never impressive. Heard of it.
Did he cook it in a turbo pot?
He, you know what? He didn't. But now he's going to be making everything in a turbo pot for me.
I also have to say, I love Publican Quality Meats, the cafe.
Yeah.
With the charcuterie, I am obsessed with Publican and Chef Paul Kahn. Yeah. So he definitely would be my backup basket.
What? What a sweet thing.
It's Women's History Month. We just passed International Women's Day. I'm just curious. We have such great female chefs in Chicago as well. Sarah from Monteverde, Mindy Siegel from Hot Chocolate. Yeah, Stephanie Izard. I mean, are you seeing more and more younger girls saying, you know what, I want to be a chef. I want to own my own restaurant. And coming to you for advice?
I think it's always been about the same. I think it's been steady. I've seen more and more women coming to the restaurant for work.
Mm-hmm. What's the breakdown percentage-wise, men to women at the highest end of the game?
In terms of...
chefs running the kitchens. Is it still mostly male?
Boy, you want aerodynamics and wings and stuff.
I'm going to need exact numbers.
You do not want to
Alex,
talk.
I'm going to need exact numbers.
I mean, there's no campfire and marshmallows where you live.
If you
know.
Answer this correctly, an In-N-Out burger is waiting for you in the green room.
Right. That's good. Yeah. I don't know. I want to believe it's 20%. That's what I want to believe. 15 to 20%. I might be being optimistic in my statistic, but I think if we're talking about attitudes and permission and that I see a lot of young kids who watch Chopped, kids that are 8, kids that are 14, 16, 18, that are coming up to me and saying, I know already that I want to be a chef. That's kind of weird for me. I went to college. I studied art history. I had no intention of pursuing cooking professionally. Woke up when I was 21 and said, whatever, I'll just go work in a kitchen and see if I like it. When I meet a 14-year-old who's writing a cookbook, I just kind of think...
live your life. Go have some fun.
Yeah, I always... like parents, when we have the younger kids, 10, 11, 12, that are cooking and... and they say, what do you think? And I say, take your kid to the playground.
Yeah.
Because if they really are going to do this with their life, they're going to need that recreation time now.
Yeah.
So that when they are doing time at the stove big time, they're ready for it.
Right.
They're rounded. They're balanced.
You two are the complete nuts for Alex. Alex loves me. She just hasn't come to that realization yet. Other questions?
I do. So my husband covers sports. And so when he comes home, our very little downtime together... we don't watch any sports. All we watch are cooking shows, you, for example. And so I want to know, when you are not cooking, eating on TV, talking about cooking, what is your downtime indulgent?
You mean food-wise or just kicking around?
Or just watching television. She's on television all the time cooking. She cooks for a living as well. She works in a restaurant. What else do you...
what do you do for a good time there?
Besides Alex? Talk about popcorn and if you want Parmesan cheese on it or not.
I'm a big fan of sleeping.
Sleeping.
First of all, it's underrated.
Yes.
I definitely watch TV. First of all, my daughter watches Food Network.
Okay.
So I'll come home from shooting an episode of Chopped and we'll watch Chopped, which is so weird for me. We watch a lot of grocery games.
Oh, she I likes love Guy's grocery games.
Yeah. Well, Guy is amazing. And that show's amazing. She likes grocery games a lot. She's in a big grocery games phase. Sometimes I sneak into the bedroom and I'll watch something else. I really like things like Billions and Ray Donovan. Mm-hmm. I watch car racing, Formula One car racing. I find it very relaxing because I'm not in the car, I'm not in the pit, and I don't have to do anything.
I've never heard anyone say car racing is so relaxing.
It's therapeutic.
Really, it's kickback for you.
Yeah. I'm like, look at them changing those tires and look at the noises and they're freaking out and I'm at home eating a cake. That's my idea of a really good time, honestly.
I want to know if there's ever been an ingredient or some sort of meal prepared for you that completely was out of left field, like nothing with gummies, but some ingredient you thought, oh my God, how are they going to do this? And it just blew your mind. It was just fantastic.
Yeah, there have been a number of instances where I've looked at the basket and thought, this is an unfortunate coming together of ingredients unless someone really figures out. You know, Ted, when he states to the competitors, you must use all of the ingredients, and he says, be it a little or a lot. And that's what I find is the nuance in everything, which is, I can use a tablespoon of something. I don't have to put the entire can. And that difference, you have to have the confidence to say, I'm just going to use a little and it'll be fine. People are like, I have to prove that I used it.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, we had a 9-pound gummy skull.
Oh God!
It weighed 9 pounds. Just giving you a statistic, so you know exactly.
That must be your gummy.
By the way, were you looking at my head when you said 9 pound gummy skull?
Well, I mean, with a brain your size, it's at least 90 pounds.
Good call.
Good call. You like that one?
Yeah, good call.
Turn that around. So they're melting down this 9 pounds of gummy and trying to put it all into the dish.
Come on.
That's a big. Well, it's a normal reaction. You want to prove you used it. So we had one basket in particular where they had pickled ginger. Pickled grape leaves and capers, and I think duck fat in a dessert.
Mm.
And everything is so salty and vinegary and pickly and really kind of savory. I thought, how are you going to make this sweet? And someone made sort of a biscuit with not that much sugar and put just the right amount of
ingredients. Was it edible?
Oh, it's nice.
It's from season one.
Okay.
And I still remember being astounded at how good it was.
How about that?
Wow, that's awesome.
Season one. So I have some certain dishes that I really have filed in my brain as, wow. You know, that's like, cool. It's hard sometimes when someone really blatantly won.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, we'll just have to see how this happens. You're trying to look like Darth Vader, but you feel like Luke Skywalker is just jumping out for joy.
Oh, what a good analogy.
Well, I want everybody to leave that show feeling really good that they put themselves out there and made themselves vulnerable to public opinion. You know, that's
a big deal.
Hard thing to do.
No, it's a big deal. It's called the Turbo Pot. We highly recommend it. Somebody texted, so what starts between Turbo Pot and Instapot? Pressure cooker and Turbo Pot is not. Turbo Pot
goes on the stove.
Yeah, it's on the stove and it cooks faster. You like Instapot, by the way?
I do.
Yeah.
Also, the Turbo Pot is like, honestly, a pressure cooker, you would cook a specific thing in there. For example, lentils, beef stew, make a stock. There are a number of specific cooking applications where you would use a pressure cooker.
9 pound gummy bear.
I think of the Turbo Pot as accelerated everyday cookware that you would use for anything.
Okay.
That's and I don't necessarily, you need both. But this is just, they're apples and oranges.
I'll let you go. But what do people say when they meet you on the street? Do people come up and go, oh, I've got a recipe you have to try?
Or
they really do.
I'm going to have to force one of my cupcakes on her.
Yeah.
In there.
What do people say the most? People say a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
People say, I love you on the show. You have such heart. You really root for the competitors, which I appreciate. Some people say, oh, you're pretty.
That's nice.
People say,
Why aren't you pretty on TV?
I thought you were, you're so pretty in person. I thought you were so much taller. You know, like in Roadhouse when they said, hey, Dalton, I thought you'd be bigger. I get a lot of that. Like, oh, I thought you were like 6 feet tall and, oh, your nose isn't that big. But they also say, we love the show. Yeah. We love watching you. We love that you're true. We love your authenticity.
I've got a peanut butter and jelly. You have to try one of
People
those.
People do that.
Yeah.
If I drink a glass of water now at a restaurant, the whole staff leans in. How is it? I'm like, I can't really go anywhere without making people sort of feel on their toes.
Well, that's all right.
And so I make sure that, I don't know, I try to leave everywhere having people feel good about what they did, because cooking, restaurants, home cooking, whatever else, it's time consuming and it's hard work.
Alex Guarnaschelli, I'm going to be valet parking at Butter. I don't know if you heard.
Oh, good.
We don't have valet, but I'm going to invent a valet for the night.
Just for me.
With your 20 top.
Just for me.
Yeah. And are you guys going to come see me at the International Home and Housewares show today?
Yeah, we got to know somebody, and guess who we know? You.
All right. That's
I'm going to drop your name at the
check
door.
Check me out at the Turbo Pop booth today. I'm going
to
be there.
Nice to
see
you.
She's going to
social media.
GNTV this in the midday right now. So.
All right. Nice to see you. Thanks for coming in.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Hello, Bill and Wendy.
Hi, Steve.
How are you guys?
Fine.
Okay.
Wow.
Are we fighting?
No, we're not fighting. Oh. We're very excited. Wendy and I. Can I ask you a personal question?
Sure, of course.
Do you like Simon and Garfunkel, Steve?
I'm more of a fan of the Garfunkel.
You like Garfunkel more than Simon? Yeah. At 10:35,
I had a Garfunkel removed. I went to a dermatologist.
What was wrong?
Well, it was swollen.
You got to have it looked at.
Yeah, you got to have it checked out.
We have Angotti and Zender. They sound like Simon and Garfunkel. They smell like Simon and Garfunkel.
Oh, boy.
And they're so much like Simon and Garfunkel, they no longer like each other. There was a time they used to get along.
They broke up?
They don't. Yeah, they broke up.
That's unbelievable.
So they will not be on our show at 10:35.
Wow. So it was a booking that ended during the plug.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
How about that?
And Gotti and Zender.
Gotti, yeah.
Phil and Gotti, Tommy Zender.
Well, hard to believe they could come up with a name more ridiculous than Simon and Garfunkel.
They did.
That's tremendous. All right, see you tomorrow.